tonight. It's been a busy week in video gaming, and we've got a packed show to match. Join us for all the latest news and sequels, prequel sequels, lawsuits, and an interview, too. All this and yet still more starts right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Lounge Radio. Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight, September the 18th of 2016, with episode number 658 of our show. My name is Rob Roberts. You might know me on Twitter at Sky, S-K-I-E, and joining me here in studio, as he does every week, say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, Loki. How are you?
Doing fine.
Hopefully you're doing better this week. I know your birthday week didn't go so well, but I hope this week
is doing better.
Now. Okay, much better. So maybe less angry rants tonight, or will we still have plenty? I don't know.
I'm sure there'll be something.
There'll be something to get the rants going on. You guys, of course, can always rant along with our show.
Like the trial version of MIRC, which is kind of, you know, not letting me actually open it, which is ironic because I actually did pay for a copy of MIRC, and I don't know where my stupid registration code is.
I was going to say, maybe it's time to register.
No, I already paid it. Okay. I paid it. I just don't know which email they sent it to, and they have no absolute way to track their registrations because they're fantastic. So,
all right. You can join us, of course, live if you are listening to our show live. Every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network is where we tape. VogNetwork.com, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And if you are listening live, we invite you to join our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. And, of course, tonight we are going to be having an interview a little later, as was mentioned in the intro, kind of following a similar theme to what we had last week. Gay was here last week with Sacramento IGDA talking about some of his indie game development things, and we're actually going to have another indie game dev on tonight. Sam from Remote Games is going to be here in a little over 15 minutes to talk about his project called Silent Earth. So we'll talk to him more about that in a little while.
It's like Silent Hill, but bigger.
No, it's actually nothing like that. But I think that there's a concept in there somewhere. Yeah, you could have a game like Silent Hill, but it's like the randomly generated areas like No Man's Sky. So it's huge. It's just huge. Maybe not. Maybe not. I think the game Sam's making might be a little more focused and possibly better, too. So we'll talk to him about that a little later. For now, let's get into our kickoff topic for tonight. So maybe speaking of rants, I don't know. This is a topic that sometimes makes people angry, but I don't think it's like one of those things to like super get irritated over. But we have some news of some big game delays, right, Loki? What happened?
Yeah, so basically there's two game delays that were announced this week. The first one being that the Last Guardian's going to be delayed again, in which everyone's like, no, to December, which is, you know, it's about a month away.
Well, after 10 years, what's another month, right?
Yeah, so they just need some extra time on it, and that's fine, whatever. And then, you know, the South Park Fractured But Whole is going to be delayed to quarter one of 2017, which, honestly, I want to say that's, I don't know if that's what happened with the first one. I know that it came out, it was delayed a few times, the first one, when it originally came out.
Yeah. And this is because there's this very interesting trend going on where every single game gets delayed. Every single one of them gets delayed. Maybe not every single one, but it definitely seems like, I mean, we hear stories about game delays far more often than we don't hear stories about game delays. So that caused me to, you know, sometimes when I read a gaming story, I have this tendency to write a very reactive tweet. I don't know. Does anybody else do this? Maybe you go to Twitter to throw out a little sass. So I did as well. And I wrote a little tweet that was like, and I used the little clapping emoji because that's what you do when you have your point to get across, right? You know, stop doing that. Clap. But I wrote a little tweet that was like, you know, game release dates are BS and they're nothing but a way to push pre-orders for retailers. Do you think that, I mean, Loki, you worked in that industry for many, many years. Do you think there's some truth to that? That, I mean, release dates really only exist to generate pre-orders and hype and all that? And
yeah, release dates change all the goddamn time, like all the time. And a lot of it's just, the problem is that they announced the two early, I think. And it is good that at least we're seeing them put out games that aren't completely buggy. Aside from, like, you know, No Man's Sky and stuff, which got delayed and still was buggy. So, but, you know, South Park, though, being that the pedigree of the game, I trust them a lot more than I would trust, say, you know, I don't know, The Last Guardian. God, I don't. It's been delayed so many times. Who knows? Well, but I would assume that's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing: it's not like I'm saying like, oh, delays are going to make a game bad. That's hardly the truth. I mean,
it's fine too, especially with normally, like, it used to be like everything you get clumped into the fourth quarter, and then it's just like I can't buy everything, which is, you know. So I was planning on picking up South Park. I already have it pre-ordered. So
you know, look at you buying into the hype.
No, I got the digital version pre-ordered so I could play the original game on my PlayStation 4, because I never finished that.
That little freebie,
Hey, that's worth it for that. I mean, come on.
Okay.
So, but yeah, normally I don't, even digitally, I don't really pre-order stuff unless I want it right away.
Tech 2030 in chat says, LOL, did Rob just do the clap emoji meme IRL? Yes, I did. let's see. A stoppy in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, NX announcement delayed. Maybe, probably, likely. You know, I would have fully expected. You know, my prediction was NX was going to be announced.
Yeah,
the
now the
Tokyo
rumor
Game
is,
Show.
Oh, it's going to be October. Yeah, come on. No one knows when it's going to be. It's just,
yeah, everybody's guessing at this point. And we're all just setting ourselves up for disappointment. Isn't that running trend with release dates and everything? Like I said, South Park, I'm sure, is going to be great. Last Guardian, it's going to be great. All these games that get delayed usually end up pretty great. I mean, the delays are often for a pretty good reason. So we've got to find this balance between the marketing department that wants to put on the PR that wants to put all these dates out there to generate the hype, and the realistic scenario of that sometimes when you're developing for an HD platform, especially now, so we have to talk pro platforms with 4K and all this stuff, the game development takes a little bit longer. Right? So where is the happy medium? And for me as a podcaster slash fan slash commentator slash whatever the hell you want to call me, this stuff has been kind of frustrating for a while, because it makes me go like, what? I feel like when we do these stories on the show about release dates, which we have some tonight, right? Tokyo Game Show happened this week. So they were talking about, oh, here's some big games that are come out and their release dates. So I'm sitting here going, well, I want to talk about them on the show because these games do sound exciting, but I don't really want to hype these dates, because how often do these dates really end up sticking? They probably won't. So I'm like, do I say it's a target date? That's kind of a term I've been liking lately, as a release target, because it at least kind of puts that image out there that it's an ever-moving thing. We even do a segment here on the show called Release Dates. Now, granted, by the time we're talking about the games that are going to be out that week, I think the list is usually pretty accurate. But even then, we've had some games that we said on the show that were going to be on shelves this week, and then suddenly there's something that happens that gets them delayed. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, that part is just, it's frustrating. But, and then I kind of look and go, does this really happen to, like, movies and stuff? Well, yeah, actually, it kind of does. It happens to movies a lot, right, Loki? Movies get moved around all the time. And a lot of that is strategical, usually, is that they don't want a movie to open up against another movie. And that's what happened with the Warcraft movie, right? It got bumped back from, like, the holidays of 2016 to not compete with other stuff, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I never saw it. Didn't have an interest in seeing it. Don't care.
It wasn't bad. And then TigerClaw in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, don't be surprised if Nintendo delays the NX. You know it's a possibility. Oh, it's absolutely a possibility.
I just don't care at this point. And the reason for that is because, like, I still don't know what the fuck it is. Maybe, so why am I supposed to be excited about it?
Maybe that's an okay place to be. Maybe that's where we as gamers need to set our expectations right now, is that, you know what? We just don't know. They're going to talk about it when they're going to talk about it. And let's just stop hyping up this thing that, for all practical purposes, doesn't exist. Because as you start to set more and more and more and more expectations of, oh, the NX is going to be for sure a tablet and desktop thing, because all these rumors say so, that's going to let you stream your games live to the remote, and it's going to have all this online platform. I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up at this point, but that's what a lot of these websites are doing, is just really reaching with patents and all this other stuff.
Online platform.
Just bear with me here. Okay. All right. So you're setting these expectations that are may or may not be met, and it's like you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. So I'm just kind of sitting here like, I'm kind of like over it at this point. I'm just over it. I will continue to talk about NX rumors and big things like that, because this is a show that talks about gaming culture as well, And that conversation still continues to dominate a lot of gaming culture. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to sit here at the same time and go, but maybe we should just stop letting that be a part of culture right now. And just, you know, when they're going to announce it, they're going to announce it. And we just don't freaking know at this point when that's going to be. And maybe y'all should just start realistically setting your expectations that NX could be a holiday 2017 console.
But the Amiibos. The Amiibos have a date of March the 4th. You know, the new Zelda Amiibos.
Oh, sure, because those retail days never change.
They
right?
never change.
Never
they
change.
They are rock solid.
Right, Loki?
That never changes
ever. What day was Beautiful Katamari coming out again?
I don't know.
Anyway, blast from the past there. Not everyone's going to get that reference, and that's okay. But anyway, you know what I mean? Those things, they're not really hard evidence. You know, retailers put stuff in their system. And yes, I know they've been hyping up Zelda for March for Wii U. A variety of things could happen. They could just delay it. I mean, Final Fantasy 15 had the biggest pomp and circumstance event over the release date of the game and still delayed it. So, I'm sorry, but this whole Zelda is for sure coming out in March thing holds just about as much water at this point. There's nothing to say that they couldn't release it on the Wii U and then the NX later, because, you know, Nintendo loves the double-dipping thing. I'm going to stop picking on them, though, because I want the NX to be great. I really do. As a Nintendo fan, I want the NX to fucking kick a lot of ass. I want there to be an awesome Zelda game, an awesome Mario game, an awesome F-Zero. I'm just going to sneak that in there. I want all that to be there, but I'm just like, you know what? I just need to just stop and just wait and see what's going to happen with this.
They feel very Apple to me. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
is it because the Apple TV still hasn't happened? Is that what it is?
No, it's not because of the Apple TV. I don't give a shit about the Apple TV. It's
the Apple car?
They just... God, no. I'm glad that that's not a thing. No, it's basically just because a lot of the Apple stuff seems to be like, here's how we're innovating, quotey fingers. You know, this is what you need, you know, versus like, here's what I want. They're like, no, but here's what you need. It's like, you don't need headphones that are $160.
Are you saying that the NX is not going to have a headphone jack? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying that it's... There's a lot of buzzwords going around about like how they're like they're starting over, they're starting from scratch, they're taking it back to the root. It's like none of this shit makes any. It means nothing to me. It means nothing because we don't know what the fuck it is. All I'm thinking it is, it's a goddamn system that's cartridge based, that's both portable and a home console. Whoopity shit! That's not a fucking like innovative thing. You know what's also portable and a home console? My phone. Because I play it at home and I play it while I'm walking around and going places.
So you've pre-ordered one of these affected games, the South Park game, but at the end of the day, you're just the delay news just hits you with a resounding meh, more time to play the first South Park game on
PS4.
Whatever,
I've got like dozens of games I haven't played yet that I bought. So I mean, that's actually no. If we're just talking PlayStation library, dozens of games. We're talking Steam library, hundreds of games. So I'm not a like, whatever. You know, oh, darn, I won't have a game to play. I'll just probably pick up Call of Duty or something.
Do you think we need to... I mean, you've heard me talk a lot here about maybe we need to reevaluate all this hype behind release dates. What's your perspective on it? Do you think we should just continue to go ahead and hype release dates? Do we need to think about this differently?
Just do it the way you've been doing it. Just don't get so bent out of shape when stuff gets delayed because you know it's going to happen. I mean, that's really the only thing. They have to announce a date, and maybe they were really firm on that date, and it's like, you know what? We could release it on that date, which is not going to be to the quality that we want, so we got to delay it. I mean, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as they're not like delaying it every single month or something like that and not talking with the people, the fans, or the people that have it pre-ordered and stuff, keeping that communication open is important. You know, like Mighty No. 9 kind of did that. They didn't really talk to their fans too much, and it kept getting delayed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And then especially, if you're going to delay it, it better come out looking great. It better be fucking fantastic. Don't delay shit over and over and over again and then just have it come out being completely broken and unfinished, because that's just stupid.
SSGO100 Matt in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, if you're violently mad about a game delay, let me introduce you to something. It's called going outside.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, like, seriously, people, like, issuing death threats for game delays, how fucking childish are you? Would you fucking do that?
What is your view of the real world? Like, seriously, what is your view of the world?
Like, I'm sorry, like, that's gonna be effective? Going, like, for a perfect example today.
Do you threaten your mom when you don't get what you want for, like, Christmas? Like, is that how this works?
Here's real life for you. On my way here to the show today, I decided to stop at Jack in the Box to get food because I was hungry, and Jack in the Box has largest portions of food. I stop there, and they're like,
"You know why that is, Loki? They cater to stoners. I know you don't smoke marijuana, but you still seem to benefit from the munchies galore thing they have at Jack in the Box."
So I went there, and then, like, I'm waiting. No one's answering. You know, the stupid, you know, the drive-through. I'm like, okay, whatever. This is typical. They're fucking just minimum wage, whatever. So finally, like, there's like, hello? And then the manager comes out. Sorry, we're closed for 30 minutes because we just got robbed. And I didn't go, you know, fuck you. I hope you die, you fucking asshole. Where's my goddamn food? I came here for food. I mean, that, like.
But you know the car behind you did that.
I mean, is that, like, that's how those people that send death threats for, like, I mean, I can't imagine just, like, daily life with them. You know, they're going to the grocery store. I'm sorry, locally, this is something that we have to do. If you don't bring a bag, you got to pay 10 cents for a bag, which is fucking stupid in its own right. But, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you have to pay 10 cents for that bag. Fuck you. I hope your family dies in a fire. I hope your house burns down. Fuck you. I'm going to come to your house. I know where you live. I'm going to murder you in the goddamn face. You know, it's like, do you do that?
I'm laughing, but I'm laughing in horror because, like, this is what Twitter would be in real life.
You don't, like, people don't do that. And the reason they do that is because they're anonymous. Because if they knew who they were, if, like, you could, like, click on their name and see their face and where they live and all that shit, they wouldn't be fucking doing that shit because they'd be accountable for what they say. But they're not. They're anonymous on the internet and they think that they could do whatever they want. So that's it.
Let's see. Alan Alchemy in chat over at live.fognetwork.com says, I'm thinking of the chicken nuggets super cyan lady now. Have you seen that video? This isn't even my final form. Have you seen that lady? They wouldn't sell her McNuggets at the drive-thru, so she just, like, she went, like, batshit crazy at the drive-thru. It's really awkward to watch. Like, you look at it and you just go,
why did they not sell her nuggets? Ma'am, you've had enough.
I think it was, like, 10th. It was breakfast hours, so they didn't have McNuggets yet. She was probably still up from the night before because of the drugs, allegedly. Let's see. Dungeon Buster in chat says, I'll mess you up for delaying my game becomes I'll love pixels that look round and yummy. SG100 Matt says, those people do not act like this in public. It's the anonymity of the internet that lets them get away with it. So, there it is. So we're going to just probably keep reporting these delays. So just anticipate if there's a big game coming out, it's probably going to get delayed.
I wonder if they could do something like with social media. I mean, I'm not against, you know, anonymity on social media, but, like, you know, like how if you have a dispute on, like, eBay or something like that, when you file a complaint or something like that, like, you get to see the seller's information, they get to see your information, like your contact information. Can we do that, like, in social media? Like, if someone's being an absolute, you know, dipshit and fucking threatening people, that, like, you file a complaint and you get to see who they are and they get to see who you are. I don't know.
It just opens a whole nother can of worms about that system being abused. There's more I could say on it, but that's just the long
and
the short.
There's no abuse on the internet. That's just ridiculous.
I think at some point Twitter themselves has to step in, but Twitter is almost like Twitter would tell you they're too big and there's nothing they can do about it. But it's one of those, well, if you're that big, you need to be hiring some type of moderators.
There's nothing you're
going to
be able to do about every situation, but you got to do something. You
can't
just
go,
it's too bad.
Your direct messages now have read receipt stamps. Isn't that exciting? All right, look.
So you can say, show me the receipts. Ah, yes, you did read that.
all right, look, we gotta change things up a little bit here. Look, let's just cut out the PR department. Let's just cut out the marketing. Let's cut all that out. Let's go back to when it's one or two people making the game, and it'll be out when it's ready. That's how they do it in the industry.
I don't know. A lot of developers don't want to talk to fans or people. I mean,
well, we've got one who wants to talk to us tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, and we're very excited about it. So we're going to bring him onto the show. His name is Sam. He's from a company called Remote Games, and the game that they're working on is called Silent Earth. And so we're going to get Sam on the line here to talk about the game Silent Earth. Sam, are you here with us?
Yeah, I am. Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can. Welcome to OLR.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is pretty cool.
No problem. Thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about your project, Silent Earth.
Okay, well, where do I start? Let's see. As far as what the game's about, it's a game that's very much sort of like thematically about simulations and how simulations reflect on reality versus like looking at reality through like the lens of a computer screen, an interface of some kind. You know, how different is a simulation from something that you're looking through, you know, elsewhere? So it's really just about it's really just about Missile Command.
Wait a minute. So you just told this whole big story, and then
I got super distracted and did a really bad intro for the game. Let me try again, okay? Is that all right?
Sure, why not? We screw up all the time here on OLR. Why not?
You there with me?
Yeah, we are. I think we have a little bit of a delay, though. So
Hello?
Hi, we're here.
I can't hear you.
Uh-oh. Okay, these things happen. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to just drop the call here real quick.
Okay.
And I'm going to try calling him back. He had the video going, and so I'm going to tell him to try not doing video, and we're going to get him back on the line. And, of course, as live radio goes, sometimes these things happen, and the chatters are having fun with it. Let's see. Tiger Claw in chat says, some developers hire a PR person to talk to them because sometimes the developer opens their mouth saying things that would cause expectations to run really high, and when the game comes out...
Okay,
Man's Sky.
Is that okay with you?
That's right. Hey, you back? Sam, you here? Loki, why don't you tell us about your gaming week here real quick while I try to fix this situation. We'll get into how was your gaming week, and then we'll get Sam back on the line here.
All right. So this week I basically played, basically just Ingress a little bit. And a little bit Pokemon Go. I got that new update with the buddy Pokemon stuff, and yeah, I completely was still bitched about, you know, having to fix my son's phone. Thankfully, it wasn't as hard to unroot it as I thought it would be. Pretty much just running recovery and uninstalling Super User, which was pretty simple, and so he's up and running again as well. It's still the pain in the ass. I shouldn't have had to do that in the first place, but we did that. And then I thought about picking up a Pokemon Go Plus, but then I've been hearing a lot of things regarding it, just how it's basically just this $35 Pokeball waster. It only throws the common, you know, your regular Pokeballs, and only throws it once, and most of the time stuff escapes, especially when you're high enough level in the game where you can't really catch stuff too easily. So it's an absolute waste of money if you're kind of past level 20. On top of that, I guess it could spin Pokestops and stuff. So I still wanted to pick it up just to be able to hack it and all that. But I don't know. I didn't end up finding it because a lot of people are scalping them. They are selling them for over retail, and because people are dumb enough to buy them, and I'm just not dumb enough to buy it for that kind of price, nor even $35. It's really kind of expensive, so I'm just not going to pick it up. The other stuff I've played, Nonstop Night, been playing a little bit more of that, and what else? Console gaming-wise, I don't think I really played anything, which is too bad, but I probably will go back. I've been working mentally, mentally working because I haven't actually coded anything on my game, but thankfully, as I posted on Twitter, I had an epiphany last night. Of course, where do you have most of your epiphanies? Sitting on the toilet.
TMI.
But no, I figured out that because the thing that was giving me the hang up on that was my engine, which was going to be kind of like almost like a voxel based engine, but I didn't really want it to be like a voxel based engine. It was, you know, I was struggling with how am I going to optimize this? How am I going to do certain things? And then last night, it just kind of like it hit me how I'm going to do it. And I was like, oh my god, this is so much easier than what I was thinking of doing, and just like I completely am going to change how I was going to do it.
All right, glad to hear you've had an epiphany. Okay, I think I've got the Skype situation figured out. We're going to try to get Sam on the line the old-fashioned way, through the old telephone, and we'll give him a call here and finish his thoughts on his game. Hey, Sam, you with us?
Yes, I am. I can actually hear you now.
Oh, much better. Yeah, Skype sometimes has a really bad delay, and if there's Wi-Fi and all that stuff, it gets crazy. But I'm glad we were able to click in the back line to get you back on the show.
Yeah. I don't know how much of the game's intro you guys got, so I can sort of go over that again if you'd like.
Sure. We got a really nice description about, you know, your vision of the game, and then you kind of ended it with, yeah, it's Missile Command. But
oh, yeah. I think maybe you missed a chunk or something. Okay, cool. So I'll just go over it again. Basically, it's a new take on Missile Command. That's put through like, okay, so like, what if we took the arcade formula of like short rounds or levels with the intention of like high difficulty for the sake of you having to like, you know, start from the beginning over and over again? What if we took that formula seriously? What does it mean thematically? And Silence is sort of my like take on that, right?
Right.
In this case, it's Missile Command, because I had the idea from playing Missile Command. That's when I sort of came up with the idea of like taking an arcade game formula seriously, right? It's just sort of how it came about. I wouldn't say it's Missile Command on a copy for copy of Missile Command. It's super updated, right? So we focus on things like, for example, you have an upgradable missile with weapons that you can change in and out, and there's lots of different ways to tailor your play style. There is a narrative to the game and a whole bunch of other stuff. So
yeah, I noticed you were good enough to let me check out Silent Earth before our interview tonight, so I did check it out a little bit. And admittedly, at first, you know, when I fired up the game, I said, oh, this is kind of, you know, it reminds me a lot of Missile Command. But as I was starting to play it, like, not even, like, a minute into it, I realized, oh, but there's this giant shield that's protecting my town, and oh, this energy meter is completely different from how Missile Command would have the missiles in it, and oh, suddenly I got this upgrade that changes my weapon so it fires this big line across the screen that would kind of just strategically change the way you might think about a game like Missile Command. I guess maybe I was like, what if somebody made Missile Command, like had the idea for Missile Command today, but had today's tools to do it? Is that fair to?
Yeah. Yes. No, totally. You know, it's very much like a super modernization of that formula. And then like, you know, like I said, thematically, like how can we evaluate, like look at an arcade game thematically, right? So yes, definitely mechanically, it's like a huge re-sort of imagining of what Missile Command was originally when it came out. You know, what might it look like now? If they had access to, like, you know, the decades of game design advancement, and then like also like, you know, just like all like the technology and all that stuff too. So
yeah. If you guys have a question for Sam, you can ask in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, and we will ask him some of the questions from you guys here live listening to the show. Silent Earth, not actually released yet, but you guys are targeting early next year. Is that right?
Yes, that's what we want to do. Right now, it's just me and one other guy. Two-man indie development team. I handle visuals, code, most of the writing, and my buddy Thomas Hoey, who is based out of Bristol in the UK, handles all the audio and the audio programming. We have a special software called FMod, which is our audio engine, and so he handles how the audio engine runs, and then I would just integrate that into the game.
Now, is it, if I remember right from reading on the website, this is like it's a procedurally generated soundtrack, like it's a soundtrack that's not always going to be the same.
Yeah, so it's not procedurally generated in the sense that, like, you know, we have like an instrument generator, right? That's like making notes. We just have like a huge bank of stems that the generator gets to pick from. So you'll always hear like a slightly different remixed version of the theme. Things will always be kind of different. The farther you go, the more we're working on this sort of sneaky little addition where. The farther you go in the game, the more the stems unlock. So the diversity actually increases the more you play. So we are like, unlocks are a big part of the game, but we actually wanted to make a game without any gameplay unlocks, aside from the upgrades. So most of the things you'll be unlocking are like palettes. Narrative is the biggest one. And then obviously the upgrades, but as you get them further on in the game. So basically if you, like the first time you encounter line mod, that means you'll have the line mod forever, right?
Right.
There's a force push mod that you may or may not have gotten to. I think the build I sent you actually has like a huge spike in difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
That may have prevented you from getting that, but but you can get that force mod, and then the first time you get that, it'll be in the pool of things that you can get at any time, right?
Okay.
Because you'll be playing it over and over, right?
So it encourages you, whereas like the first time you play, you might be like, okay, so I've got missiles, and this feels a little familiar. The further kind of down the rabbit hole you go, so to speak, you start to get more and more elaborate, and you get to keep these things with you.
Yes, yeah, 100%. The game definitely encourages, like, it definitely encourages you to keep playing it. As far as mechanical like interplay between all the different stuff goes, right? So the game will be super basic when you start. By the time you end it, you'll have a much more depthful knowledge of, you know, the way the different bosses behave, the way different enemies behave, and that sort of stuff. So we definitely want to have the game start really simple and then become complex, right? So yeah. The learning curve is a lot more shallower.
We have a chatter in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com named JK, LOL, who actually gave a link to the game, which is interesting because the link actually goes to this other website, this TIGsource.com, which seems to be, from what I'm not super familiar with it, but I'm guessing a lot of indie devs are. I haven't made a game, but actually, yeah, you probably know this site better, Loki, but as I was starting to dig into it, I thought it was really cool because you were basically posting this big log of like all the changes you've been making to the game, and you could really see how some of the feedback you were getting was influencing you. And so I could see some of the earlier screenshots of your game and kind of go, oh, well, that's different from what I just played. So
yeah.
I know he's made some changes. How is that process of being very, I guess, public with your game development?
Well, TIGsource is a great, great community. And a friend of me put it this way, because before I started on TIGsource, right, I was super about making this game in secrecy. And I didn't even care about how much money I made on it. I just wanted it to go out, and no one really knew what it was, and it to be kind of enigmatic. But I went to IndieCade with a friend, and while we were there, he sort of convinced me that, like, hey man, you know, I know that more than working on this game and having it be like the thing that you want it to be when it comes out is not as important to you as making another game later, right? And so he said, even if you start showing all these people all the different feedback that you make and stuff, there's so many people who are going to see this game that just don't like have no clue what it is. They haven't heard of it before or anything, right? So for a lot of these people, they will absolutely still get that magic, even though you're sort of, like, even though I'm TIG, obviously, I'm, like, showing the game's guts, right? Like, here's how we intend players to feel at this moment, and so on and so forth. So the public part has only been good, you know? There's not been anything bad about it whatsoever, because the game has just improved since I started the TIG.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of, just looking at the visuals, it reminds me a lot of, like, the Space Invaders Extreme or whatever that came out.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I can see those parallels.
Speaking of the design and the look, we have a comment in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com from Dungeon Buster, who says, the narrow orientation makes the action look a bit claustrophobic, but I'm guessing that's probably by design. You know, that's a really good call out, is that Missile Command, you know, the old game, was on square TVs, basically, in the arcade and at home and so forth. You know, when you decide that you're going to go with a cell phone for your platform, you went with the more, you know, a lot of games go widescreen with it, but you went portrait with it, which I can totally see what Dungeon Buster's saying. It kind of gives a very different, more claustrophobic feel to the game, especially if you are familiar with Missile Command. Was that a design choice? Like, what went into that?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. When I started on the game, I realized that the vertical screen look, like, I want to make a mobile game, right? And so I realized that vertical games, I have always had more fun in interacting with vertical games. I don't know how much mobile gaming you guys do, but there's, you know, like Ridiculous Fishing, obviously, is a huge one, you know, Downwell. You know, all these vertical games are just, like, super fun to interact with, I think because that's how the phone is designed to be held, and so you don't feel weird at all trying to control the phone like that. Like, when you turn the phone sideways, there is a weird disconnect just from using the phone that way because you're not used to holding it like that. Whereas, like, you know, like, imagine if you try to hold, like the first time you try and do claw hands on an Xbox controller or something like that. It feels really weird, and it takes you forever to get used to it. But the reason why I did edged vertical is because it's very natural. I also think that, you know, as far as the claustrophobic part of the game, it's claustrophobic by design for sure, because that wouldn't, that, like, I don't think that's, like, a property of it being vertical, necessarily. Like, it's supposed to be that way because there's definitely tools that, like, sort, like the different mods, for example, that, like, work with that, and enemies that are designed to sort of, you know, make things more or less claustrophobic and intense and busy, right?
Right.
Right.
Looking at other comments in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com, I love this name, and I hope I'm saying it right. Glorp Bibbledop in chat says, I was looking for a game that for my kid's iPad. They're two. Do you think, first of all, luckiest kids in the world having an iPad at two. I'm guessing it might be a hand-me-down.
Yeah.
Do you think this would be easy enough for them?
I don't think it would be necessary. I mean, it would be easy enough to play. I don't know if it's like what we plan on writing the game is necessarily going to be something it would be like 2-year-old material, but it's also kind of one of those things that like when I was a kid, like really little, right, and was playing games, I played Myst when I was 5.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the content in Myst just went straight over my head, like narrative wise, right?
Right.
And that's like a pretty intense story. So yeah, it might be great for a 2-year-old. I've never had a 2-year-old play test it, but I don't see any reason why playing it wouldn't be, because there's no words in the game, the actual gameplay, right? Like, it's all just icons and, like, you know, like shapes and stuff.
Yeah, I kind of think, based on my limited experience of the game, I kind of think a 2-year-old's going to get a really big kick out of just, like, touching the screen and seeing the explosions happen. I don't think they're going to understand the game at all, but I think they're just going to be like, ooh, when I touch it, it does things. You know what I mean?
Right, totally. Yeah, so I think, you know, as far as, like, you know, a kid playing it and just, like, being able to interact with it mechanically, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And, I mean, the controls are very, very simple, which you kind of have to have for a mobile game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I sent you a PC build, right?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. The PC build is, you know, it's way more fun to interact with on a phone. We're playing around with PC builds right now because we think it'd be cool to, like, have it on Steam, just as, you know, have other, like, basically to build interest for the mobile version. But we're not entirely sure on that yet. Most likely we will pursue Steam though.
Now tell us a little bit about, you know, cause we've been talking a little bit in the first half of our show tonight about, you know, why games get delayed and all this good stuff. And, you know, obviously what I played of your game was good. I mean, it needs, you know, it probably just needs that polish, like a start screen and all that stuff. But for the most part, it seems like you've got a good game in there. So what are you kind of working on between, tell us a little bit about what it is you work on between now where your game is, you know, shaping up to be the game and, let's say March or whatever, when you are planning to release. And I'm throwing that out there based on the
right.
Winter.
Well, you know, can I give you a little history of the game's development?
Please.
That might help frame it.
Absolutely.
So I started on the game, like, it's been a prototype, right, for, like, most of its life, which is, like, 5 years. And this game doesn't feel like a 5-year game. It's something, like, I've worked on other stuff and totally had this, like, it's progress, isn't it, 5 years, and I've totally had it on the back burner and worked on it and tweaked it. I moved recently and decided to start working on it full time, and that was back in January. And it's just been, this really, like, the game did not play the same way back then. It was way slower. The game was, like, way more zoomed out. The action was more, it was more like zen, like of a zen game. Like, it wasn't even hard, really, to play. And I ended up turning it in, like, more of a full-fledged action game, and it worked out really well. So being that it's just now become, like, what I think it's going to, like, its most resembling version of its, like, final form or whatever, you know, at this point, we're just adding content. So the build I sent you is just really, like, a super vertical slice of the game, right? There's, like, 3 rounds and 2 upgrades, none of the narrative stuff, you know, none of the, there's no unlockable system. The round just repeats. There's no menus. So as far as mechanical systems and all that go and, like, how it plays, it's going to stay about the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely, you know, at this point are just at the content stage.
Interesting. So it's like you have the core of the game. You have that, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the Chewy Center or whatever, the game is done. But now it's about building all the rest that kind of goes around it. This is probably why they say in game design, what, like the first 90 or the last 10% takes as long as the first 90%, something like that?
But, yeah, exactly. Because right now, you know, it was actually a pretty big effort for me to just get it to the point where it feels as good as it does, and I'm really confident in how the game feels to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel like that's most of the work, right, is getting a concept that's legitimately fun, because I feel like that, you know, that's something that, like, even people who have been making games for a really long time, like, not me, right, like, I'm just an independent developer, so, like, even people who have been making games for a really long time sometimes struggle to come up with games that are legitimately fun when you play them. So that's the hardest part, but now I just have to, you know, flesh that out and explore the concepts in it and really try and just create a ton of content that really highlights all the aspects of the design.
I got to mention some of the chatters here. When you talked about how it's been kind of like a concept that's been evolving for 5 years, you know, our very own Loki here has been working on his own game called It's Time to Car. And a lot of people have been giving him crap because...
Oh, yeah, I stopped working on that.
Yeah, right? It's been taking you years, right? But some folks in chat, like JKLL says, hear that, Loki? 5 years. So it's almost
That's because I'm not working on that one anymore. I have another one that I've been working on longer, so that's fine.
You get distracted. All right, let me... I know we're a little bit past time here, and I appreciate you staying on through all the tech difficulties and all that stuff, but I want to ask you at least one more... I want to ask you at least one more question here from SSGO and Hunter Matt in our chat room saying, have you taken the game to any conventions or shows to have people demo it? If not, do you plan to take it on the road to conventions?
Yes, we have. We went to Pixel Fest, which, so I'm based out of Richmond, Virginia, and we took that game to Pixel Fest, which is a tiny little that was the first year they did it, was this year. It's a tiny little festival in Norfolk, Virginia. And then I went to Indiecade and got one of their show and tell tables. And that's Indiecade East in New York City. We are hoping, we just submitted for MAGFest. So we will see how that goes.
Well, good luck. MAGFest is the only East Coast show I do now. So I'm going to be there in 2017. So I'll cross my fingers for you guys.
That's awesome.
I hope you guys get in so I can play this game at MAGFest. And you have some people cheering for that in the chat as well. SSGO and Hunter Matt, who asked that question, is a MAGFest goer. So best of luck. I hope you guys get in there.
We really appreciate it.
So if people want to check out the progress on Silent Earth, I would give you the link to the dev blog, but it's a little lengthy, so I'm going to encourage you to get the link from your company website, which is remote-games.com. And if they want to follow you guys on Twitter, it's at remote-games.co, right?
Yes, Remote Games Co. Yeah. And feel free to follow me also. That's just at Sam Lotion, SamLoesChen.
And I'll tweet that out from the OLR account so people can follow you and continue to watch this game progress and see what the concept of Missile Command might look like with 2016 bells and whistles on it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I appreciate your time. Thanks for bearing with the technical difficulties and for talking about the game. It's been awesome.
Gosh, thank you. We're an indie podcast, and we love to support indie developers, and we want to wish you the best. You know, and I just want to say personally, I think you made the right call on being more transparent with your game's progress, because, you know, I think everybody wants to, and to use a person's name as a verb here, everybody wants to Beyonce the industry and drop their CD with no announcement and everything like that and shock everybody, but you can only Beyonce the industry if you are Beyonce. I think.
Yeah, if you've already got the audience. Yeah,
exactly.
So 100% agreed.
I think you made the right call there, and I think this way it allows people to really kind of see what you're going through there, and I think people who might be considering developing their own game can kind of learn from some of the stuff you've been going through.
Yeah, well, it's 100% a labor of love, you know? Like, I'm making this my full-time job. We 100% are doing this off of savings, so we're... Wow. We're doing this to make this, we want to make it as good as we possibly can be. And I, you know, like what you're saying, making it public and making it a transparent process had done so much for that.
You have to wonder how some other games that have come out, you know, in the past year would have done through a more transparent process like that. But I'll leave it at that. Sam, I want to wish you the,
I totally agree with you. Yes, I want to wish. All right. Well, you guys have a nice night. Thank you for having me on.
You too. I want to wish you the best of luck with Silent Earth. And thanks for being on tonight. You take care.
Yep. Take it easy. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, that was Sam from Remote Games, who's making Silent Earth. And check that out, the screenshots and everything. Again, that's remote-games.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Remote Games Co. Stoppy in our chat room says, brave man. Yeah, to be putting all that out there publicly. But again, I think, you know, he's right in saying, I noticed that community was very supportive. And, you know, it's funny, we were talking earlier about how there's a lot of nasty people out there on Twitter and so forth. But he kind of chose this, you know, site that really kind of caters to people like him, which I think is, you know, the way to do it, to be public with something like that. So that's great. So,
and yes, I'm not working on that game. There's another game. No, seriously, there's another game I was working on before I started that other, It's Time the Car, that I am still working on now. And that hopefully now that I've had this epiphany, you will actually see something for it, because now I have, I know where to go now with it. Uh-huh. And that's
just now from or just from
no from earlier. Oh, okay, from I was talking about earlier. No, no, I had no epiphany now. But no, no, from earlier. What I'm saying, you know, because I figured out how I'm going to do the engine, so now I can build the engine.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right. Well, best of luck to you, and best of luck to Sam as well. And you know, I kind of neglected to tell him this, but you know, Missile Command is like one of my all time old school favorite arcade games. So you know, even though we had a little joke and a laugh there in the beginning about, well, basically it's Missile Command, it really does like kind of feel like what that might look like with a 2016 tool. You know, when they developed Missile Command, they did it for what, a 4-bit system that right. was very capable of holding only a little bit of data. And, you know, now with a game like Silent Earth, we can talk about, you know, a soundtrack that kind of changes itself as you progress further into the game and unlock more, you know, measures and so forth. You know,
yeah, it's really very does, different thing. It really does remind me of kind of like a remix take on those old classic arcade games, like, you know, the Pac-Man Championship Edition or the Extreme Namco games that they have.
Well, let's actually, what a perfect segue into my gaming week and talking about the video games I've been playing this week, because I've been spending a lot of time this week with Pac-Man Championship Edition 2, which came out this week on PlayStation 4 is the platform I picked it up on, but I think it's also on Xbox One and it's on PC as well. Yeah. And I've got to say, I'm having a ton of fun with it. Like, the music is really, really good. I think I kind of made a joke that they should have called the game Pac Rave, because that's what the music kind of feels like to me. And, you know, I loved Championship Edition, and I love DX. And it's really interesting because I find it hard to play the original Pac-Man these days. I mean, you know, if I walk by a Ms. Pac-Man machine or something at an arcade, which I actually did. We were at a downtown arcade this week. A friend of ours was in from out of town. So
it's a downtown arcade?
We took him to the Coin-Op, you know, that bar.
Oh.
That has, yeah, all the, like, old school. So we took him to Coin-Op, and we actually, they have a Ms. Pac-Man machine there. So you have to play Ms. Pac-Man, right? But you kind of go, okay, I'm playing this for the memories. This isn't exactly, you know, a game that might hold my attention in a marathon style in the year 2016. But what I think the Championship Edition and the Championship Edition Deluxe and now Part 2 bring into that is that it really takes a new spin on the classic formula that really, like, draws you in. And so, you know, with DX and DX2, it's speed. A lot of it is speed and really running through those mazes and the precision. So with DX2, they changed a couple big things from DX. And one of the biggest things they changed is Pac-Man can collide with ghosts now, which you kind of take a step back from that for a minute and go, well, wasn't that the whole part of Pac-Man was not to touch ghosts? You can touch ghosts now. So the whole thing is, but you can touch the ghost 3 times. And when you bump into the ghost the 3rd time, the ghost gets mad. And he'll move faster and chase you around the maze a little bit more aggressively. So it sounds like a really simple thing, but it really changes the way you move through mazes, because you kind of think to yourself, oh, no big deal if I bump into this train 1 time while I'm trying to eat these other dots. But if it's like completely in the way, I might have to think differently about where I'm going. The other big change that they did, which I don't like as much, is that when you eat the dot, the ghost trains start to move at these hyper speeds, like they move super fast. But what you see in the maze is a wireframe, like a white wireframe of here's where the ghost may go. And so you have to catch the ghost by predicting where it's going to go on the white wireframe, which, you know, it's neat in the way that it's fast paced, but I just don't like it. Really kind of slows the game down in a way too, because like you eat the power pellet and then it's like you're in this chase phase, and it's a really hard phase to control. Like if you're trying to go for a really high score, it's really hard sometimes to eat the ghost train fast, and you might get screwed on your score just because the ghost train is not where you need it to be. It didn't go down the right path. So I don't know, that element of it I don't like as much, but it's kind of a minor complaint, all things considered. I like a lot of the visual flair they have in the game, really a step up from the deluxe. I mean, the music's really good as it was in deluxe. Now you have this whole thing where, like, when you eat the fruit after clearing the board from a ghost train, Pac-Man kind of flies through the middle of the board and lands on a new board. And it's this really cool little visual flair that the music just kind of adds to that environment and everything. So I really like what they did in that way. But I guess the only negatives I could really say too, as well as besides the wireframe thing, is that they have this whole adventure mode that's in the game, and it's kind of a throwaway mode to me. And if you saw like the boss ghosts in the trailer and all that stuff, that's all in the adventure mode. And all the boss thing is like six mazes, rapid fire succession back to back. You don't actually like attack the ghost, right? It's really none of that. So it's just a visual flair thing. It's cool the first time you see it, but honestly, adventure mode really struck me as like a throwaway thing. It's really all about the competition mode, which is very similar to the core structure of Championship Edition and Championship Edition Deluxe. So, but the game's priced right. It's about $13.99, $12.99, somewhere in between that $10 to $15 range. And I think that's a fair price. They're not asking $60 for it. They're asking between $10 and $15. I think that's a good way to do it. So I like that. Let's see. Act Deft in chat says, ghosts get irritated if you touch them. I can imagine Pac-Man going like, I'm not touching you. Well, you have to kind of assess that as you're moving really fast through the maze, is that do you have enough room to bump into the ghost one time so you don't set them off? And actually, if you're playing on a more advanced mode, you can only bump into them one time, but you can still bump into them, which is a very new thing for Pac-Man. So I thought that was a pretty neat concept on an old game. Other than that, the only game I've been playing a lot of this week is World of Warcraft because of the expansion. I've been catching up from being out from Dragon Con. I hit max level. I hit 110. So I guess that says something. I really think it might be early to say, and I really have to see what the support for this expansion looks like, because with some of the previous World of Warcraft expansions, especially the last one, Draenor, the support is almost what killed the expansions because there was hardly any. So we really have to see what that looks like. But I can just say the outside the box experience, I think this is the best expansion since Wrath of the Lich King. I really do. And, you know, most people stopped playing WoW after Wrath of the Lich King. So I think that kind of says a lot about the quality of this expansion. I really like some of the decision choices they made with it. I think they're learning some things from their competition. I see elements of things I enjoy about Final Fantasy XIV in World of Warcraft. So I knew these MMOs could only help each other out in that regard. So that's really exciting to see. Still love me some Final Fantasy XIV, but what that game's getting a patch in like 2 weeks. So I still feel like I have enough ample time to really kind of sink into WoW, and then I'll probably go back to Final Fantasy XIV to check out that new patch. So yes, I'm paying for two MMOs right now. I don't know how long that's going to last, but I guess it depends on where the people are. We'll see. But that was my gaming week. Essentially, it was pretty much those two games. We're going to get into some gaming news here. I do first, though, want to plug a few things coming up. Did you like tonight's interview? Guess what? With Jamie being on hiatus, it kind of motivated me for more content on the show to really try to book more interviews. And I always wanted us to get more interviews on the show. Yeah. I think they're a lot of fun. Hey, I got some good news for you guys. We have like interviews booked through like mid-October right now. So I'm going to tell you about some of the guests we have coming up on OLR. You guys ready for this? It's awesome. Next week, Aethernaut is going to be here. Aethernaut is going to be one of the performers at GX4. He's a musician and he's very well known. He used like some violins on stage when he was performing and so forth, kind of incorporates that with chiptunes. So really excited to welcome him to the show. Aethernaut's going to be here next week. On October 9th, our pal Ryan showed off a game at PAX West called Monsters and Monocles. And that game got a lot of great feedback. And that's available in early access on Steam. So Monsters and Monocles is going to be here on October 9th. And guess what? October 23rd. Very excited about this. A Rock Studios is going to be here on the show. And you may not know them by their name, but they made a game on Steam called Cat President. And they will be here on OLR October 23rd. So we will talk to them about Cat President and what the inspiration for a game like that might have been. No, I'm sure it's the election craziness and all that stuff. But, you know, we're gonna laugh it off, some of the similarities between that and Sugiban Sochao Ran a Wii and all that stuff we went through like 8 years ago. So very excited to welcome them to the show on October 23rd. So if you or somebody you know that's developing a game or is a part of gaming culture might want to come on OLR, be sure to contact us. Participate at OrangeLoungeRadio.com. So very excited about that. And then, of course, as we're moving into November, on 20 November, episode 666 of OLR, which will be a devilishly good time.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase flower.
Very excited about all that stuff that's coming up. There will be no show, however, on October 2nd. We will not be here live that night. Unfortunately, that is because myself and Dark Sakura, even though she's on hiatus for the show, she does have the weekend off work, so she can attend Gamer X4 with me. Loki, sadly, not going. You know, family, kids, all that stuff. We're going to be at Gamer X4. VOG Network does have a table, once again, at the show, so you can come up and say hi to us throughout the show. I'll be there. Dark Sakura will be there. Some of our other VOG Network hosts will be there. Extifer from Guys on the Show will be there. For those of you who used to listen to Horde House, he's there. Shane may be there. He's on the fence right now if he can make it work or not, so he may be there. I know Captain Spike from Game Buoy. Also First Mate Slidekick, also from Game Buoy, they will also be there. So we're going to have a lot of representation there at Gamer X. So check us out there at the show. Also, we're going to be having a panel called the Indie Gamer Super Show on October 2nd, actually, that Sunday at 2 p.m. We're one of the last panels of the event. So I'm a little nervous about the fact it's after checkout time. But at the same time, you know, the Sunday at last year's thing was still pretty hopping. So I think we'll get a lot of folks that want to check that out who aren't ready yet to say goodbye to the con. So if you're one of those folks, be sure to mark it on your schedule to join us for the Indie Gamer Super Show October 2nd at 2 p.m. at Gamer X4. VOG Network, of course, will be at the Expo Hall throughout the show, right in the same room with companies like Blizzard, Microsoft. I don't have the list right in front of me, but I know they've got a lot of cool stuff this year. So excited to see that. All right, let's move on. Let's get into some gaming news for the week. Loki, starting us off.
So one thing that was coming out of Tokyo Game Show was some actual gameplay for Metal Gear Survive. You know, that kind of, well, we're Konami, we have to make something, you know, for Metal Gear. But I don't know. It looks stupid. But someone decided, hey, you know what? Let's ask Kojima to see what he thinks about Metal Gear Survive. And, of course, you know, one of the first things he says is, that has nothing to do with me. It's not my game. That has nothing to do with me. Sorry. So then finally, you know, they asked him what was he think about, you know, how it fits in with the rest of the series. He says the Metal Gear games have been about political fiction and espionage. Where do zombies fit in with that? He basically said if he had worked on the game, it would have had mechs in it. So I just like how he's like, that's not me.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
That's not mine. I didn't make that.
Not something I want to be involved with or associated with when the time comes. Now, so
something that he is working on, of course, is that Death Stranding game, which we still don't know too much about. However, one of the things we do know now is that it is an open world action game. No, not really sure what exactly the details are of it. Basically saying, you know, that he basically wants to, I don't know, he's waiting to unveil more information about it.
Of course.
But, yeah, basically saying, though, that he is working on the engine still. They have selected one, and, you know, basically it will accommodate 4K and HDR when that finally, which I imagine, you know, most engines are going to be nowadays. So yeah, we'll have to, hopefully next E3 we'll hear some more about the game.
Going back to the Metal Gear, that's not really a Metal Gear or what have you, do you think, I mean, when you hear that, like, okay, it's kind of like they're just basically reusing the assets from Metal Gear.
It is exactly that. Like, I watched, like, some of the gameplay from it, and it's like, yeah, we had all this desert. That's why it's in the desert. You know, it's like, oh, well, it was, you know, in the water, but it's actually the desert now. It's because they had a bunch of desert assets, and then they just kind of mocked something, you know, up with it.
I got to admit, look, I understand the controversy and everything, but I got to admit, it's a little clever on Konami's part to get the most bang for their buck, because they did spend, to be fair, they did spend a lot of money on Metal Gear Solid 5. I don't know how much of it they made back, but regardless, why not make a little more off of it?
Then the thing that looks interesting about it, though, is the co-op. I mean, that would be kind of cool, because you're being be able to, like, kind of take down stuff, you know, with friends. So that was kind of neat. But yeah, it's just really, really weird. I don't know.
Well, we asked some of our users on social media to tell us their thoughts on what's going on with Metal Gear Survive and if you're interested in it or not. And, of course, you can follow us over on Google Plus, google.com/plusOrangeLoungeRadio, where ActDef said, I'm not interested in it one bit. It's just Konami doing what Konami does best right now, milking a franchise until it stops giving them money. It's sad. Over on Facebook, over at, of course, facebook.com/OrangeLoungeRadio. William Murderface said, it looks like Left 4 Dead with a Metal Gear skin, so probably not. It seems like a cheap knockoff, and without Kojima, I wonder if they can maintain the direction and allure of the series, especially given their shenanigans over the last few years.
They just didn't, like, rebrand it. Like, just use the engine, use, like, kind of the assets that you have, and rebrand it as something else. You'll come up with some new main characters, and that's it. But I guess, you know, they want to have that Metal Gear brand name attached to it. It's just, it doesn't really feel like a Metal Gear game. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. It's like kind of how what they did with Lords of Shadows, where it was supposed to be its own thing, and it's like, oh, we'll throw Castlevania on there. But it's not really a true Castlevania game.
Dark Tetsuya pointed out, is it just me, or does the new director look almost exactly like Hideo Kojima?
You
we'll clone him. If you won't work
Kojima now.
If you won't work for Konami, I'll clone you. Now, here's two very different sides of the coin, but with the same answer. You ready? So Andy R. said, I've only played the last few Metal Gear games. So far, this one hasn't hooked me, partially because I'm tired of zombies, partially because fuck Konami, partially because it just doesn't look good. A very sound, reasonable explanation, right?
From yeah.
Okay. Then listen to this side from Kane I Am. Is there even enough words in the English language to express my displeasure with Konami? Answer, no, there is not enough words in the English language to properly articulate my extreme displeasure with them. Suffice to say, if they were on fire and my genitals contained the only source of liquid to extinguish the raging inferno of bullshittery that is Konami, I would relieve myself across the street in full sight of them, then sit and roast marshmallows over their engulfed corpse and drink beer until finally I lost interest.
As have most of the people in this Metal Gear franchise.
Also a sound and reasonable explanation, right?
It's just, it's hard to, like, after Konami just was such, they were such assholes to fucking Kojima. It's like, oh, hey, we brought back that game you guys like with zombies, because I know you guys love zombies. The zombies, like, it's like asking marketing people what someone, or I'm not necessarily marketing people, like asking executives what people like for, you know, games and stuff. It's like, well, what's doing hot right now? Well, we've got this zombie game that's doing well and this other zombie game. Well, let's put zombies in our game. People like that. It just doesn't work that way.
I do want you guys to know a lot of the chatters are kind of laughing at that comment. Dungeon Buster saying, let the hate flow through you. SSGO and Hunter Matt saying, they won the internet, whoever that was. I will let you know, I did a very rare thing I don't usually do from the Orange Lounge Radio account. I liked that comment over on Facebook, and you should too. Facebook.com/OrangeLoungeRadio. All right, let's talk about... This is interesting because...
Speaking of delays?
Well, no, it's not so much that, but it's more like the whole... So you're milking the franchise over here, and everybody's like, fuck Konami. but you're milking the franchise over here, and everybody's like, yay, 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 give me more. And that would be Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8.
Can we please explain the fucking numbering of this franchise? Because I am,
well,
absolutely sick and tired of these stupid numberings.
It's after 2.5, but before 3. So they took 2.75 and rounded up, I think. I don't know. Anyway, look, it's the continued story beyond what you saw in the 2.5 remix as we move into 3. So Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue is releasing...
Final Chapter, my ass.
...is releasing in Japan on January 12th, 2017. And there was a whole new trailer and some cover art for that as well. But of course, I know people want to check this game out, and I do too. You know, having it all remastered with the nice coat of paint and available on the PlayStation 4, a lot of folks are going to be very excited about that. So those appear to be the new dates for Kingdom Hearts 2.8. Now, some other games were announced by Square Enix, including a new game in the Saga series. Saga Scarlet Grace, which I think was actually announced... I want to say it was announced previously, but it's been announced now that it will come out on December 15th, 2016 for PlayStation Vita. And they announced a new trailer with that as well. So folks that are in the Saga series, I'm sure can appreciate that. But since it's on the Vita, don't expect it to come here unless they do a remaster for PlayStation 4. So it has to do really well for that to happen, I think. Also announced, you know, with the delay with Final Fantasy 15, I'm sure there's some sadness there, but Hajime Tabata did make an appearance during the PlayStation press conference to talk about a limited edition PlayStation 4 slim model. It's called the Luna Edition PlayStation 4, and it's got the big moon on it that you see kind of in some of the screenshots of the game. So, and that's it. It's a giant moon, which the moon is always, like, you know, makes me think of Final Fantasy IV, and you know the moon is usually a theme in a lot of the...
It doesn't make you think of, like, Legend of Zelda?
Well, I definitely think of that as well, but I'm trying to think of it in the Final Fantasy context. But that game will be out. No, it is not a giant butt, Brad, from Pod Culture. It's not that kind of moon. It's like, you know, the thing in space. So you can
the
get...
giant butt of space.
Yes, it's the giant ass of space. Look, I gotta say, it's a nice-looking box, and... You know, if I didn't already have a PlayStation 4, and if this was something that could play, you know, U.S. Actually, I think PlayStation 4 is region-free, right?
Yes.
So I guess it could play U.S. PlayStation 4 games, but I'm not going to invest the money in yet another PlayStation 4 when I already have one.
I think that's coming over here, too.
Is it really? I didn't...
I want to say it is, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that that was coming over here as well. I do know it's launching in Japan on November 29th when the game is coming out as well. It's going to set you back 39,980 yen, which... roughly is where $3.99 US would be, but you know, obviously exchange rates are a little crazy right now. So there you go, some stuff from Square Enix out of Tokyo Game Show. Loki.
All right. So Sony is unfortunately having some layoffs. This is with their Sony London studio and also San Diego studios. You know, basically, they have confirmed the layoffs at Sony San Diego. Nothing really yet for London, but you know, basically said we can confirm that there has been a reduction in headcount at San Diego Studios. The teams working on MLB The Show, Drawn to Death, and Guns Up have not been affected. We continually evaluate teams and programs at SIE Worldwide Studios to ensure that we have the proper resources in place to deliver innovative products and blah, 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 PR speak. So, yeah. And then on top of that, also, I guess, Sony London that are working on the VR-exclusive, at least that portion of, was it VR Worlds or whatever, the London Heist, they're, you know, facing layoffs as well because of the wrapping of production. So that's unfortunate. But it seems like, you know, just, you know, given our history and stuff with these studios, it's kind of just, you know, the normal workflow of these companies. You know, you lay people off at the end of these projects.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that's just like the ebb and flow of game development. But it's still, you know, it just sucks to see that, you know, especially like on Twitter, I was actually seeing people, you know, say, hey, I just got laid off from Sony today. Anybody have any job openings? Because, you know, I have friends who are in the industry that will sometimes retweet, you know, things like that. And so, you know, I saw that kind of playing out live. And it's still sad to see, especially when you kind of picture in your mind that Sony is having a lot of success with PlayStation 4 and a lot of those titles. It's kind of weird to see that going on. But, you know, it is what it is. So, all right. Moving on. Let's talk about a little change with Blizzard that some of you will like and some of you will hate. It has to do with battle tags, you know, especially as more and more of you are getting into Overwatch and probably maybe re-entering the World of Warcraft and so forth. You might think it might be time to change your battle tag. And, you know, if you didn't already do it, you can change your battle tag one time for free. But if you want to change it a second time, it used to be too fucking bad. You're up a creek, no way you can change it a second time. But now,
then they decided that they want more money.
That is exactly right. Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Now you can change it, but it'll cost you money. There will be a fee behind that if you want to change your Battle.net tag. $10 to change it a second time. By the way, though, I should point out, this is exactly like Microsoft's system. Microsoft lets you change it one time for free, and then if you want to do it, I keep waiting to see if something like Rob Roberts or something else will open up, and they haven't yet, so I don't know. I guess I'll keep the one I have on Xbox for now, but yeah. So Blizzard, now you can change your gamer tag over there as well. But no matter what you change it to, you're still always going to have those four digits after it. Like, you know, your gamer tag is, like, mine is Sky, like my Twitter handle, pound, and then I don't even know the four digits that come after it. Like, I don't have them memorized. I have to, like, have my Battle.net open so I can share it with you if I choose to or whatever. You know, so I guess that means that allows me to have the name Sky and, you know, 10,000 other people just under to have that name as well. But it's still a little weird when you're trying to give out your handle. So, anyway. By the way, JKLOL and Orange Wright, both in our chat over at live.bognetwork.com, bring up a good point. Sony, when? And on PSN, no luck. And JKLOL elaborates, and you know what's total BS. If your name is offensive on PSN, they will allow you to change it just fine. So you got to make sure you start with an offensive name and then you'll have to change it. Yeah, that's a good point. Sony's still kind of missing that capability of being able to change that. So even though I keep waiting for this to change on Microsoft where my name frees up, I'll never be able to change it on PlayStation unless, who knows, maybe that'll be one of the little, you know, things behind the curtain they unveil at the inevitable PlayStation conference this winter, like they've been doing for the past 2 years. I'm just assuming they're going to do another one this year, but we will find out. So, anyhow, let's move on. Speaking of PlayStation, Loki?
Yes. So, you know, with PlayStation VR right around the corner, you may be wondering, hey, what do I get with PlayStation VR? Well, one of the things that they're bringing with it is a demo disc. Yes, a demo disc. It's like something that we haven't seen in a long time. But they're actually going to be including 18 demos with this. The games included with that, we've got Illuminate, Battlezone, Drive Club VR, Eve Valkyrie, Nog, I guess, or GNOG, Harmonix Music VR, Headmaster, Here They Lie, Job Simulator, PlayStation VR Worlds, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, the kitchen teaser, Res Infinite, Riggs Mechanized Combat League, Thumper, Tumble VR, Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, Wayward Sky, and Within. And I guess in Europe, they get a slightly smaller list of titles. Drive Club VR, PlayStation VR, Worlds, Riggs, Tumble VR, Battlezone, and Eve Valkyrie, and Wayward Sky, and Headmaster. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. That's going to be included, at least to give you kind of a taste of some of those. I mean,
I wish they would have given some free games with it.
You still get the PlayStation the
Worlds?
No, not Worlds. Worlds is something separate that you have to buy, but you get that like game, not gamer, but it's what they call it? They have the one with like all the robots and stuff, Playroom.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like VR Playroom or something like that. That does come with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. My sons like Playroom. I mean, they like playing with the robot stuff that's on there. So I'm down for more of that, I guess. Still haven't canceled my pre-order yet. So, yeah, I don't know. But, like, a lot of these games, though, like, I don't know after playing the demo if I'm going to buy the full game. I mean, there's a lot of these that are really short experiences. I guess I'm going to have to wait until to see what all the buzz is. And I still haven't made it over to Best Buy to check out PlayStation VR yet.
You know, I have a PlayStation VR on pre-order, and I've been telling you guys this for the past few weeks. I'm still on the fence. I'm hovering over the cancel button with that PlayStation VR. I just don't know. I feel the money adding up, and I'm starting to think about all the other things that money could buy right now. And, you know, and going to the chat room, there's a comment here that, you know, is a common theme, I think, with new hardware. Glorp Bibbledop in chat says,
Which is the best name, by the way.
Is a pretty rad name. I predict PlayStation VR will fade away into nothing like Kinect.
I hope not. I mean, honestly, because I think that VR so far seems to be a little bit more solid than Kinect.
Yeah.
Whereas Kinect, it was kind of hard to see what they would use the experience for. But we have some pretty good experiences with VR, most of which are like on the Vive. But, you know.
Well, that's the thing. That's the interesting monkey wrench is that, you know, there was really only the one Kinect. I mean, I know there was PlayStation Move and Wii, but those are very different. But, you know, we have some other VR things that are kind of battling for, you know, they're not all going to flourish. Some are going to fade away.
But here's what makes me a little bit sad, because I know this is going to happen. If they're willing to fucking update the PlayStation 4 to have a PlayStation 4 Pro, you better believe that within a year to a year and a half time, you will have a PlayStation VR Pro.
Hey, that worries me a lot. That's a very sad but possible analogy there. But here's the thing. The point I wanted to make is that, you know, for the PlayStation VR to be able to sell, it's going to take what? It's going to take games. Games, games, games. And PlayStation VR is going to have that game that is a must play. PlayStation VR needs its Wii Sports. And I'm not saying it actually has to be a sports game or a mini game.
It just
collection.
Needs to have a good game for it that like people want to play.
And see, here's the thing. And the reason why I'm still tilting in the yes column is that I go, oh, Rez in VR. Yes, I've played that game a million times before, but it's one of my favorite games, and to be able to play it in VR is going to be so fucking rad. And it's kind of like if we just had a little more like that, like when they announced the Space Channel 5 thing, until I realized it was only a demo, I was like, oh shit, this
like
might...
Child of Eden would be pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, same concept, right?
But, like, I mean, Rez is all right, but I've played Rez before. And, like, I just think, like, the VR thing will be just kind of like, oh, that's cool. And then it's going to wear off, like, the wow factor is going to wear off really fast with it.
Zippo25 in chat says, do you guys think Oculus will be available on the new Xbox if PlayStation VR sells well?
I gotta be honest, you know, like, I'm not interested in the Oculus anymore. I'm more interested in the Vive. Honestly, I think the Vive seems like a better... The thing with me, the Vive, though, is the setup. Is like, that shit is not going to fly in my house. I got to set up all these sensors and stuff, and she's like, no, it's not going to fucking
happen. It's
pretty elaborate.
I mean, Bobby brought it to Dragon Con. You can build it up and tear it down pretty easily, but yeah, it is a lot.
And, you know, it's fine, you know, but it's just like... that seems more interesting. Maybe when they come out with their controller and stuff for the Oculus, that might be a little bit different. But honestly, it seems like more of the cool stuff is happening with the Vive.
And I wonder if that's because you're kind of a gamer and Vive seems like the gamer VR right now, whereas Oculus...
Well, they've got all the room space stuff. I mean, that makes a big difference versus just like, you know, the sit and chair. Anything can do the sit and chair and like look around stuff. Mm-hmm. Hell, my Gear VR can do that, but... Like, that seems more interesting to me. It's just that moving around and interacting within a space versus just, you know, the Oculus Rift. I like the Oculus, but I think if I was going to pick two, like, if I'm building a PC for VR, I'm getting a Vive. I'm not buying an Oculus.
Bobby Blackwolf in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com saying the number one games people want to play in VR are Mario, Zelda, established games. That's why Rez is a big thing. It's something familiar that you can play in VR. See, I half agree because I'm like, I totally get why. And I understand there's, you know, somebody ported 8-bit Zelda to Oculus Rift. And it's like, that's a horrible idea because that game was not designed for that environment and it doesn't work well. And so like, I kind of understand why I don't really want a Mario Zelda type port I mean, if Nintendo were to suddenly get into VR tomorrow, which I don't see them doing, but I'll humor this line of thought, you know, maybe they did a Mario Galaxy-esque type game for VR, but that's designed with VR in mind. Nintendo's pretty good at selling a peripheral at this point. You know, I think
it's got to be F-Zero, though, because if you're going to make a VR game, it's got to be like, I'm going to puke. You know, yeah. It's going too
if
fast.
If Nintendo made a VR game, they would fucking do it because they would go. But at the end, I think this is why Nintendo is not going VR. I'm not sure Nintendo is fully invested on wanting to do that. But anyway, I'm digressing. The thing with Rez is that I look at a game like Rez and, well, yes, it's one of my favorite games, but, you know, just that whole, like, Rez has always been about an extrasensory experience, right? With the trance vibrator, teehee, and the Xbox controller, and then when it went on to Kinect and Child of Eden, it was always about trying to be, like, these bigger experiences than maybe just what you could be in with a TV. And I kind of look at a game like that, and I go, well, in VR now, that could work.
I'm
where
surprised
Zelda
they don't
couldn't.
Have force feedback in the PlayStation VR, like the headset, or like, you know, like imagine like having you know, kind of four areas of feedback on your head, you know, left, right, back, front, or something like that, where, you know, that might lend itself to something, you know.
Bobby reminding me of an experience that happened at Dragon Con, saying the PlayStation VR, Sky refused to play the F-Zero light game in the Vive. I offered. I had Radial G. I just played it for him. Yeah, well, at that point, see, and here's the other thing with VR. I can do VR, but after about 30 minutes or so, I'm kind of like, okay, I need a break. You know, like, I don't know if it's the 3D pull on the eyes or just the fact that it is so, like, sensory, but, like, I can't do VR for a long, long, long time. Like, it starts to just, like, okay, I need a break. And so, you know, I think I had played, I think that was around the time I was playing the Audio Shield game or whatever that was called. Then he mentioned the F-Zero game, and I was like, you know, I need a break. So he played it instead, because I was actually worried. I'm like, an F-Zero experience might be too much right now. But anyway, don't forget, though, and this has been a long tangent, but an important one, Microsoft is also invested in this AR thing with HoloLens. And, you know, I responded very positively to AR and HoloLens.
No, I think AR is going to be fantastic in what they're going to do with it, especially when we get into the technology that actually is going to be beaming images into your retinas, you know, instead of having a screen, basically. It's going to, because they have,
here
like
comes
some,
the holodeck. Once
they have some
the
prototype glasses
literally.
And stuff that kind of do that, they beam images, but it's more of like peripheral stuff, like, you know, speedometers and that type of thing. But that's kind of cool, like that it uses that.
But I also very much understand with AR that it is a whole new canvas that you have to make games on, and especially this Mario and Zelda thing is not gonna work in AR. Like, and yes, I realize some guy made an emulator that projects the emulator in AR, but it's, I mean, what is it? It's the 2D experience just on the HoloLens as a delivery system. It's not really anything, you know, it's going to take a new thing, but that Fragments thing I played, I was like, okay, this is like a 90s Sierra game with today's technology, and it was rad. Like, I really, really enjoyed it.
So here's something that's kind of interesting also that they announced during Tokyo Game Show with this Sony VR. So with PlayStation VR, you're actually going to be able to untether it from your PlayStation 4 and use it with your mobile phone. So they had, basically, it's called Anywhere VR, and allows you to connect your mobile phone to the PlayStation VR to use it like as a virtual world with some different backdrops, and you can use your own music in it and stuff. Now, I'm not sure what exactly its intent is, if it's just to use your like mobile device with it, but I mean, they have like some screenshots that show like you can select some backgrounds. They've got like a, you know, your smartphone screen, Twitter, and some sort of like mini games and stuff that you can play on there. So that's interesting. It wasn't kind of unaware that they'd be able to do that without, you know, being hooked up to the PlayStation 4. So I don't know. That'd be kind of neat to have something that does mobile and that. Although, let's be honest, I think it's fucking bulky. I don't know. If I wouldn't carry it. I would like wouldn't ride on a train or something with that thing on there.
It's a concept that maybe somebody can figure out a really good use for that type of thing. Yeah.
You know what I'm looking for?
What?
Is the fucking PC drivers for this shit. That's what I'm saying. Like, if I'm buying a PlayStation VR, I like it. Let's see some PC drivers for that.
All right, let's talk about another big Sony event, and that is No Man's Sky. And no secret that some folks have been very critical of No Man's Sky. And I'm kind of at this point where it's like, okay, you know, I liked No Man's Sky, which is funny because even in the beginning, during all these previews and things, I was pretty critical of, like, show us the fucking game already. Remember that, like, 2 years ago when they showed it? I'm like, what's the game? But now that I've played No Man's Sky, I enjoy it for what it is, and I look at it as a Zen experience, kind of like Minecraft. Of course, the Sentinels kind of screw that up, but it's, you know, creepers will do that to you in Minecraft as well. It's kind of a very similar thing. Like, I see more of Minecraft in No Man's Sky than anything else. For me.
I don't know. The Sentinels are really a pain in the ass. But like, I think that's literally the worst part of the game. There's a lot of worse parts of that game.
Well, here's the thing. I'm just saying, like, I enjoy the game for what it is, but I also understand the criticisms. And even I'm getting to a point where I'm like, their Twitter has been radio silent for like a month. I don't know if Sean Murray went into witness protection program or if he's taking, you know, honestly, you've spent years of your life making this game. You do deserve a break of some sort, but at the same time, you kind of need to support the game. You kind of promised me. I mean, it's a very tricky line to watch. So this weeks upon weeks of complete radio silence is getting a little irritating. Like, and I say that as somebody who's really tried to support No Man's Sky, I'm kind of at a point where I'm like, they are like, the longer they go with not saying anything in response to some of these criticisms and the future development of the game and what they want to do with patches, like, the harder it is for me to cheer them on, if that makes sense, right? Well, now, even this week, the noteworthy thing that happened, Sony Studios president Suhei Yoshida said he understands some of the complaints from players who don't feel like they're getting what was promised to them, saying, quote, I understand some of the criticisms, especially Sean Murray is getting, because he sounded like he was promising more features in the game from day one. It wasn't a great PR strategy because he didn't have a PR person helping him, and in the end, he is an indie developer. So he goes on to talk about, you know, it's a great indie accomplishment, but he's probably overwhelmed with, you know, the work going on in the game. Yoshida does reiterate, though, I am super happy with the game, actually, and I'm amazed with the sales the game has gotten. So, but it's very interesting that even Yoshida was willing to be a little bit critical. And I don't think it comes from a place of, you know, trying to hurt the guy or whatever, but he's definitely willing to point out, like, yeah, dude kind of overpromised, and it's because he didn't have a PR filter. Very interesting, though, because on the flip side of things, why did I get sick of going to E3? Because I don't hear anything but PR speak at these types of shows. And that's why I like to interview indie developers more often, because they will tell me stuff that's going on and they will talk a little more about game development and go off script and stuff. But at the same time, I think we can have that conversation, but not necessarily overpromise. And that may have been where Sean Murray made mistakes.
I don't think it's necessarily he made mistakes. I think it's more of there is pressure on him to release the game at a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he just couldn't get all the features done in the time. And I think the longer it got delayed, the more pressure he got from Sony to release that title. And I think that's kind of what led to all this,
right?
If I were to guess. But I don't know. I mean, I don't see him as bad as, like, Peter Molyneux, you know, where it's like, Peter Molyneux will blow, you know, he'll...
Yeah, whatever happened to the Milo game? Whatever happened to that? Anyway, SSU 100 Matt says, I partially blame Sony for this. They really hype the hell out of this game like it's a AAA title at E3, when in reality, it's just an indie game. So SSU 100 Matt saying, you know, maybe Yoshida should take some of his blame as well. Interesting. JKLOL wants to point out, you can get beta updates. As radio silent as they seem, there's a channel to follow active development. So that's something to keep in mind. And then Bobby Blackwolf says, you know what's a PR blunder? Time to Car. I was so hyped for that game, only to be utterly disappointed.
Hey, you and me both. Seriously, that's why I didn't release anything, because it was utterly disappointing. It was like, you know, hey, I could have released the game as is. I still can. But it's not that fun, and I don't want to release a fun game. Plus, I don't have a PR person. But fuck them.
I'd be your PR person.
Ah, fuck that. I don't need a PR person. Like, I'm willing to tell you that the game's not good. I'm like, sorry, I just didn't release it because it's not ready yet. It's not what I wanted to, you know, what I want to do with it, it's not even close to being like that. So hopefully with this next one, it'll be a lot better because I'm more hopeful with it and more inspired on this one. Whereas,
but you're not going to tell us a goddamn thing and tell us right away. You are going to try to Beyonce us with this,
aren't
you?
I'm not trying to Beyonce. Yeah, I just I have to have something to show you. I can't talk about it until I have something to show you.
All right. Well, speaking of PR nightmares, what do we have next, Loki?
So I've been following this because I you know, I'm a pretty big fan of Jim Sterling, you know, the Jimquisition stuff. And he does, you know, he, you know, to kind of go way back, he does a series called, you know, Best of Steam Greenlight Trailers and stuff like that. And he'll basically take these really terrible games that are on Steam that have these really terrible greenlight trailers and kind of just, you know, make fun of them, I guess, or criticize them. And so one of the games, and this actually may have been like one of his little like kind of Let's Plays that he did, was a game called The Slaughtering Grounds, which is a game from a company that's called Digital Homicide. And so they didn't like that he, you know, poo-pooed on the game. And so they, you know, did a review of the reviewer type thing. And then he did a review of the reviewer type thing. It was ridiculous. And so, but they put out tons of games. They put out like, God, over 60 games in like 2 years. I mean, it's just shovelware, basically asset flipping stuff, which is not bad. I mean, you can buy assets off the Unity store. They're all Unity games. So you can buy assets off the Unity store and then, you know, use those assets to make games. But these were just like, they're literally just buying the assets and like just kind of doing nothing with it. It's just bare minimum work to get stuff out. So they later on went to sue him, you know, for $15 million because they didn't like how he was, you know, they said that they were, you know, he was causing libel or some other damages and stuff. And it's just, it's a big cringy thing that he did an interview with them. And it's just, it's ridiculous. So they've taken it a step further because he hasn't talked about them in for a long time. Now they've decided that, hey, guess what? You know, basically, Steam users are still making fun of these games. They're not. They're criticizing the games. We're going to sue the Steam users. So they're suing 100 Steam users for a total of $18 million for personal injury is what they claim. And so on top of that, not only are they suing them, but they're actually, you know, they are seeking basically, I think they got a subpoena from, yeah, Arizona. They got a subpoena to find out, you know, who these 100 users are. And with that, you know, they're now going after Valve as well. And they're trying to actually get somebody to help represent them. Because right now they're representing themselves, which is fun. And so...
Okay, wait. They're going to subpoena 100 users who left reviews. Like, don't they have to agree to terms and conditions when they list their game
store? It's not even really reviews. It's just like, you know, they're saying, you know, usual internet shit. Like, oh, you know, these guys are, you know, these devs are crap. You know, they're going to probably end up turning out being like, you know, serial killers versus, you know, game devs or stuff. And it's in response to like, you know, some of the interviews and stuff that they had. And, you know, just.
Okay, well,
usual internet shittery.
Steam does need to do something about that, and I understand they are, but, you know, suing for all that money?
Yeah,
like,
basically saying, you know, that, oh, it's because of these, it's because of these reviews and these people's comments that we're not selling our games. Not because the quality of our games are shit, it's because of these comments. So, on the last straw that they have, you know, when they, with Steam, you know, they were basically saying, we need this information. Seems like, fuck you. Bye-bye. And they pulled their games off the store because they're not going to have them abuse the system. And
did you hear the quote? Because Dungeon Buster posted the quote here in chat. I like what Lombardi said, short and simple. Valve has stopped doing business with Digital Homicide for being hostile to Steam customers.
Pretty much. So, yeah, they're continuing forward with the lawsuit. I don't know if really anything's going to come of it because I don't think they actually have a lawyer yet. They don't have the legal fees. In fact, they tried to do like a Kickstarter thing on their own website to you know, raise the legal fees.
Do you know what this – I'm sorry, but do you know what this reminds me of like to a T? You know what this reminds me of like to a T? It's a completely different industry, but exact same thing going on. Okay, you're a big fan of Gordon Ramsay, right? Hell's Kitchen and all that stuff.
Yeah.
This is Amy's Baking Company all over again. Do you guys remember? And by the way, what do both those things have in common? Amy's Baking Company, and Digital Homicide. Arizona. That's the common thread, y'all. Arizona. No offense to our listeners in Arizona, but I'm thinking most of you are probably nodding your head in agreement right now. So, if y'all didn't see that episode of what was that show called? Kitchen Nightmares? Is that the
Kitchen
one?
Kitchen Nightmares.
Okay. Where these folks at Amy's Baking Company just flew off the handle, right? And then, you know, it was a mess. Gordon Ramsay walked off the show, but then it was the fallout where people started leaving these reviews on Yelp. And what happened? They threatened to sue the people on Yelp.
If you've got stuff, like, right? if you've got a good 45 minutes to waste, you really want to listen through a really cringeworthy audio recording, go to thejimquisition.com and actually check out the special podcast Jim Sterling and Digital Homicide Hash It Out. Go look that up. It's just, once you listen to that and you're like, oh, that's why they're acting like this, because they're just not all there. I mean, it's just, who does this? But whatever, yeah, well, and you're sinking themselves.
And again, the same thing with Amy's Baking Company. Countless interviews done with those people, and you're kind of sitting there going, these guys really need a second person to filter a lot of this through. Like, they should not be doing interviews directly. It's like the same type of thing. So it's just, I'm sorry, I couldn't help but think of that. It's the Amy's Baking Company of the gaming world.
And I have to wonder if they're actually going to be taken off Steam, because even though the games are, I mean, you can still redeem keys and play the games if you really want to, which I don't know why you would, but they've had like several games come out that were under other pseudonyms for their company names, so I'm wondering if they're just going to release them under those instead. But I don't know. But yeah, that's the fun Digital Homicide thing that's going on. Hopefully that none of our listeners are one of those 100 Steam users, although, to be honest, I don't know how much a threat you would actually be, what in trouble or kind of trouble you'd be in. Hey, if anyone actually does get sued, I would totally recommend hitting up, Ryan Morrison, the video game attorney on the Reddit, because mm-hmm. he'd be someone that I can imagine defending these people.
I wonder if he's had a take on this at all. I'd be very curious to hear.
You know, I thought about the other day looking up to see what his comment would be on that. I follow him on Twitter. I haven't seen anything yet, though. I don't know if he would comment yet.
All right, well, something I think a little less controversial as we start to get into the Classic Game of the Week, because we are going to get into the Classic Game of the Week here shortly. But, of course, Darksakura is on a bit of a hiatus from the show due to some conflicts with her day job. She'll be out for a couple months. But if she was here, I know she'd be really excited about this coming from Tokyo Game Show, and that is Digimon World Next Order. It is coming out in the West. That's right. We are getting Digimon World Next Order here in the West on the PlayStation 4. Apparently not the Vita in the West, although that's something that's going to be happening in Japan, although that doesn't really surprise me whatsoever. So anyway, it will be released in North America and Europe in 2017. The game has over 200 Digimon, and you can have two of them at your side while you're out in the digital world on a quest to stop the Machine Dramones and get home. Apparently, this is on the calendar for release in early next year, not something you have to wait for holiday. Again, that coming out of Tokyo Game Show. You know, I can't help but wonder, even though I know some people are going to cringe at this comparison, but you can't help but wonder, does the success of Pokemon Go play into this at all? Yes, I realize Digimon and Pokemon, completely different. But you know some business person's got to be sitting there going, yeah, I smell money. I smell money, and it's with monsters in your pocket. So, what? We have a game about monsters? Yes, put it out. Well, yes. They love the Pokemon in the state. They'll love this too. So I can't help but wonder how much of that played into that, but regardless, I know fans of Digimon probably don't want to hear that, but I just feel like that probably is something that was considered before this announcement was made. So, there you go. Digimon World will be released early next year, but we are going to take an opportunity now to take a step back in history. Long before there were MMOs, and long before there was even a PlayStation Vita, we're going to take a step into the gaming vault with a segment we call the Classic Game of the Week. And thanks to the magic of radio, Darksakura is here!
Hi!
Fresh from having dove into the vault to find a classic game for all of you this week. Because every week Darksakura picks a classic game, 10 years or older, that she says, hey, listen, you little brats. Stop playing your newfangled Warcrafts and your Pokemans and play this.
This could have been their grandparent.
It's probably old enough to be somebody's grandparent.
Yep.
What is the classic game of the week, Dark Saga?
Turbo. Turbo is...
Wait, I thought that was a system.
No. Rab.
It is a game.
It is a game. It is a game by Sega. It came out in 1981 in the arcades.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was, five. Yeah, I was young. So anyway, Turbo, came out in 1981 by Sega.
And by the way, that's what the game sounds like, and now I'm going to mute it, because it's very monotonous and kind of...
Beep, beep.
A little bit annoying.
Yeah.
The soundtrack was not the game's strong point.
Soundtrack.
Exactly.
Soundtrack. Anyway, it had three formats. There was a standard upright, and there was a cabaret mini style, and then an environmental cockpit style. So a seated one.
Cockpit.
Cock. The cock goes in the pit.
What kind of game is this, Star Sakura?
It's a special game.
You go
for
turbo.
Special people.
You go turbo style on it.
You play with the stick. You twist it and see what happens. Anyway, so with this particular game, you had a steering wheel and you had a gear shift for low and high and an accelerator pedal. And it had a 20-inch raster display, which, I mean, what else did they have back then?
20 inches is pretty impressive for 1981.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it had an on-screen display and an LED panel that had the, your player's score and your high score table. And it also had lighted oil and temperature gauges on either side of the steering wheel. So for its day, it was pretty advanced.
That's kind of cool. I remember that in Spy Hunter, too. It had the actual lights that would show up on the machines. That is pretty cool.
At least that one had a soundtrack.
Yes.
At any rate, Turbo was ported to both the Intellivision and the ColecoVision. I had the ColecoVision version as a kid. It was the best thing ever because... And this is where I'm going to take a bit of a deviation. With the ColecoVision...
Are you being a deviant here on OLR?
Always. With the ColecoVision, you would unplug one of the controllers and plug in the steering wheel controller. And the steering wheel, it had this thing that you could take out that was an accelerator pedal. And you'd put... We used to put it on a TV tray, you know, the old school aluminum TV trays. And you'd have the small little wheel on top. And then the place that you took the pedal out to put it on the floor, you would actually put your controller there. And the controller had all those numbers on it to choose your difficulty. But then it became your gear shift when you were driving. And it was the coolest thing. My mom would just play the shit out of this game. And my mom's like, I don't like video. Bullshit, mama. You played that game more than me. Anyway. Turbo requires you to go down a road, a different kind of race in urban and rural locations with different weather conditions and during different times of the day. The cars are meant to resemble Formula One race cars, and you have to pass and stay ahead of at least 30 competing cars before the time expires. And then some of the opponents are easy, some of them swerve around, so you do have a difficulty curve on it. In the first round, you have unlimited lives. Collisions will return your car back to the starting line. In later rounds, though, you have three lives, but you can get an additional life up to four. And then you sometimes have to avoid an ambulance. It can overtake you and run into you. Yes, that's... death by ambulance.
Wait, so the ambulance will try to run you off the road?
Yeah.
I guess that's not...
Running into one will make you lose a life. So,
well, yeah, running into cars generally is not a good idea for your
specifically
health.
The ambulance. If you tap it, you'll die.
I see. It's representative of the lawsuit that's coming.
Right?
Yeah.
The game was designed and coded by a guy named Steve Hanawa. And he said, and I'm just going to go ahead and quote a little bit here, that despite its historical significance as a precedent-setting racing video game, he considers that the process of creating it to have been his worst development experience at Sega.
Oh, my.
He said that it required such a difficult and protracted schedule of coding and debugging that he was hospitalized for a month.
Yikes.
for stress, exhaustion, and a spontaneously collapsed lung.
Oh, my God. So it wasn't just Atari that was working there. I think the difference is that Atari was drugging up a lot of their people, or they were on drugs.
Allegedly. They were on the drugs. Look out for you children.
And just go watch some of the old documentaries. I'm not like being a jerk. Like you hear some of the old documentaries and you hear some of the developers talking about some of the crazy stuff that went down at Atari. Not to make this about Atari, but maybe Sega needed a little bit of, you know, at least some liquor or something.
Well, this game actually had a little, actually quite a bit of bad luck around it, around its development. I'll get into that in a moment.
Is it like the Poltergeist of video games?
Maybe. Mm. I'll get into that in a minute, but the thing about this game that really made that precedent is that it set the stage for pretty much all racing games down the line. It was the first full-color raster display racing game that had the third-person perspective rear-view racer. It also had scaling sprites for competing AI drivers, trees, cityscape elements, and the first third-person racing game to feature multiple landscapes. So it was also one of the first ones to also have hills in it. So this game really set, you know, a new level for racing games.
The hills are alive.
With the sounds of motors.
With the sounds of ambulances killing you.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, yeah. The hills are alive with the sound of music.
There's the ambulance.
Oh, yeah, there is.
The wham-bulance.
It does kind of make a hideous noise as it goes by you, doesn't it?
Everything about that game makes a hideous noise, including me screaming when I run into trees. anyway, so here's where some of the more worst of the drama gets in, is there was an Atari 2600 port planned by Coleco, and it was even advertised by Coleco, but it was never completed because the lead programmer, Michael Green, had been struck and injured by a drunk driver when he was riding a bicycle.
Yikes.
And so the prototype was about 80% complete, and it was found by another Coleco programmer named Anthony Henderson in his attic in 2006.
Wow.
There was also a Turbo board game that came out in 1983 by Milton Bradley.
Huh.
Yeah, the game got great reviews. It was reviewed by Computer and Video Games magazine in the July 1982 issue, and they really found it to be very realistic for its time, you know, and thought it was amazing. It pretty much had been like the king of racing games for a while. And then the ColecoVision version was reviewed in 1983, and it scored a 10 out of 10 by Arcade Express, and said that while it wasn't as graphically arresting as the arcade version, it comes reasonably close to matching the multi-scenario brilliance, and the special control panel lifts this cartridge to greatness. So there you go. Turbo also was the inspiration for Turbo Time in Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yep. So, there you go.
All right. So, when did Pole Position come out comparatively? Because when I look at this, I go, oh, it's kind of like Pole Position, but Pole Position had to have been a few years later. Pole Position had to have been like 83 or 84, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Give it was a little later. Because remember, Pole Position had the audio, and it just was a little more advanced. But you definitely see a lot of, I think, what you see in Pole Position, kind of like you see early forms of that in Turbo.
Pole Position came out in Japan July 1982.
Oh, yeah, so it was only a year later. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. But still, I mean, still. Very neat.
But Pole Position, I mean, while yes, it is, of course, graphically superior, I don't think it would have existed if not for Turbo.
No, and definitely I see a lot of like the early forms. I guess what I'm saying is that like Turbo kind of looks like an early form of Pole Position in some ways. So
it was Sega.
Sega. All right, there it is. Your classic game of the week, Turbo.
Beep, beep. Wee, 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 wee.
You know, speaking of classic games of the week, I feel like, you know, last week on the show, we just did an anniversary. We had the Dreamcast, right, had a birthday. Well, this week, the GameCube is turning 15, believe it or not. The Nintendo GameCube turning 15 years old this week. And I think we're going to probably have a lot of these birthdays in the coming weeks because we're starting to get into that holiday period, you know, when things, you know, start, you know, systems and stuff come out for the holiday period. So we're going to be seeing a lot of anniversaries. But yeah, the GameCube, 15 years old this week. Memories of the GameCube? You owned one, right?
Yeah, I still do somewhere. My sister has it in storage or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she did with it. I don't know. I'd say Animal Crossing was definitely, you know, a fond memory. And Zelda Wind Waker. Enter the Matrix.
A little game called F-Zero GX.
F-Zero GX, absolutely.
So I will never forget, though, you actually bought me a GameCube and Animal Crossing. Isn't that ironic that all those years ago you got me into that Nintendo system? Although I knew I really wanted one. It was just, you know, at the time I didn't have a job where I could just buy things that I want. So that was a really awesome gift that you got for me at the time. But yeah, I would say in some ways Animal Crossing changed my life in some ways, especially the old one.
Yeah, the old one was great with like the NES, you know, games and stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, yeah, well, no, that wouldn't be very good on mobile. But I was just thinking, you know, can you imagine like the Animal Crossing game?
Well, you're going to find out next year because that's one of the Nintendo IPs. It's going mobile. There you go. So you have that to look forward to. No, actually, funny, you guys all know Shane, who's on this show quite frequently and hosts his own shows that are on the VOG Network. But I met him through an Animal Crossing LiveJournal community. Yes, I did. That's a true story. And so all these years later, here we are. So it's just kind of funny how that works out. But that used to be where you could, like, you know, you would put in the codes to, like, say, I think the LiveJournal community was about you could actually, like, send gifts to people with the codes in the game. And, you know, there was I remember there was a thing where, like, if you were Link from Hyrule, somebody had the code for, like, every single thing for your village. And so a lot of people, like, worked the system like that. But if you wanted something, like, custom for you, somebody had to generate the code in their town. And at the time, that was a pretty, you know, considering that the GameCube kind of danced around the online thing. There was Phantasy Star Online and nothing else that ever went online to that system. The code thing worked out like really, really well. So that was.
But they did a lot of like innovative stuff, like especially with like hooking up like the Game Boy Advance, you know, to play either the NES games or
the Wii U,
the island stuff.
Yeah.
It's like that was pretty cool. That's innovation. Wii U wasn't innovation. It's just kind of like, oh, it's a second screen. It's like, well, we've already kind of done this with the game, you know, the Game Boy Advance, the DS.
Which wasn't really supported very well, unfortunately. I mean, there was that Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles game that was pretty badass that used that, right? And there was the Zelda Four Swords. Of course, everybody knows that one. But I feel like there really weren't a lot of games that used that whole setup for as awesome as it was at the time.
Too bad. I mean, you know, if only cell phones had controllers on them, we could have a lot of cool shit.
All right. Let's do some rapid fire news. Quickly cover some of the other things going on in the industry this week.
So speaking of mobile, RPG Maker is going mobile. So I know that kind of checking in for some reason, like I got this idea. I was like, hey, it might be fun to make something in an RPG Maker. You know, I was like, I think I bought some of those a while back. Let me go check my Humble, you know, license page or whatever. And so I saw that they had a new RPG Maker MV, which was like $80. I was like, fuck that. I am not buying that for $80. But they're going to be launching, I guess, RPG Creator for iOS, which is going to be launching September 25th. And then also, you know, it looks a little bit more basic than the other stuff, but at least you can do that. It's only going to cost $9.99. And so that's kind of neat. And then you'll be able to upload your games to a creator's portal where others can try them out as well.
Hmm.
I know that the RPG Maker MV, I think you can output the mobile on that. So that's kind of cool. If you really want to make like an RPG or something, then that might not be a bad route to do it. Although just wait for another Humble Bundle because they had one a while back, you know, where it was really marked down. Or hell, if you really want to get into coding and stuff, got 48 more hours for that Game Maker, you know, bundle, which is honestly... just pick that up. That is worth it for $15.
Yeah.
So
and with the RPG Maker, you know, even though you kind of razzed the $80 price, like, you can actually release full games from that, right? That's where, like, yeah. To the Moon came from.
Yeah, you can release full games of that. I just think, I don't know. I mean, it's all right for what it is. I think it's just a little bit limited. Although, to be honest, though, the MV, though, is a lot more open. Like, I think they support, like, JavaScript in there or Java. So there is actual programming language support with it. So it's a lot more full-featured versus, like, some of the earlier RPG makers, which are a little bit more basic in what you could do with them. Plus, they also have, you know, built into that was the... Because they had kind of, like, a Dragon Quest-style battle system, where it's basically, you know... You would see it head on versus sideways, like Final Fantasy. But they added that sideways battle system in Final Fantasy, or from Final Fantasy, in this latest version as well. So maybe worth it for some people. I'm not going to drop $80 for it for something that I'm not sure I'm going to use. But I'll wait for it to go on sale. Maybe.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then this is kind of interesting, but I saw this and I'm like, oh man. You know, like, because we didn't really get Dead or Alive over here, but our Dead or Alive Extreme. But guess what? It is coming to Steam. So you know what that means. There will be nude mods for this shit, like, day one. I mean, you want nude mods in this? That's how you get nude mods. But Dead or Alive Extreme Venus Vacation will be coming out on PC. I guess it's via a website. Oh, maybe not Steam. I'm sorry, I misread that. So it's actually maybe not mods, since it's based off a website. But you never know. People can get creative. So that's coming to PC. What is coming to Steam, though, is Galgun. So that'll be coming to Steam soon as well. I may have to check that. I actually like the first Galgun game, so we'll have to see about that. That's coming to Steam September 27th.
All right, lots of stuff getting ported to PC, huh?
Yeah.
I doubt this will come to PC, but some of you will probably be interested in this. On the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita, in Japan anyway, in 2017, a new Fortune Street game is coming out. What's pretty neat about this, it is Fortune Street Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy 30th Anniversary Edition. So it's a new Fortune Street game that actually incorporates those two franchises as well, and a new little trailer was shown for that. So Fortune Street's kind of like, if I remember right, it's kind of like a board game-ish type of hybrid game, so it's pretty cool that
they did that with Mario as well. There's a Fortune Street game.
Yeah, so I don't know if they do they release those over here. I don't think.
Yeah, it got released over here.
Did they?
It was on the Wii U, I think.
Well, then maybe this one will come out.
Maybe it was on 3DS. It was either the Wii U or 3DS.
Dark Tetsuya. Yeah, that's right. Dark Tetsuya said they had the one on the Wii with Mario. That's right. I do remember that. It was just like the Fortune Street game. So, yeah, they I think they get more of them in Japan, but they do release them over here once in a while. So maybe that one will come out. Also, if you are still playing Animal Crossing or going to go back to Animal Crossing, because Animal Crossing New Leaf is getting an update this fall, but I think a lot of you, like me, are probably scared to go back to Animal Crossing because your town is overrun with weeds and you're going to have to spend hours and hours picking goddamn weeds on every single screen in your town. Well, good news is there was a tweet that came out from Isabel. Isn't that adorable? Animal Crossing UK account, Isabel, actually tweeted and said, been away from your town for a while. When the free update arrives this autumn, I'll take care of all the weeds. So Isabel's going to clean your town for you. And ActDeft in chat says, bitches don't know about the Clean Town Initiative. Yeah, I guess there's actually, you know, you can set like perks and stuff at the mayor's office. From what I remember about the game, I think I always took the extended hours so that things would actually be open at night. Or I think you can actually like flip the clock like within the game or something like that. There was a way you could do that. But anyway, if you were to choose the Clean Town Initiative, you would not have weeds either. But it sounds like initiative or no, Isabel's getting out the weed whacker and she's going to take care of the town for you when you come back to check out the Amiibo update.
Too bad they couldn't just like, you know, have you like push a lawnmower. That'd be kind of cool. Or
that
drive
would be
a
funny,
lawnmower.
Like a rideable lawnmower going to
that'd
town.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Except for all the murdering that would happen when you run over the townsfolk, you know, with the lawnmower. But
some people might want that.
Hey, can you imagine that? And, like you dig a trap hole, they're stuck there head high. It's just like, I'm run over the lawnmower.
That was in the first episode of Scream Queens, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Rest in peace, Def Taylor Swift. Somebody else saw that show, right? Somebody else out there had to see
that show. My dad
watched
that show.
There you go. So, why? Well, then your dad would get the joke.
Because he likes visual effects artwork or makeup and stuff. So
that makes sense. All right. Let's check out what is in stores this week, starting off in the U.S., Logie.
So, of course, we still have lots of stuff coming out. So this week, we've got Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse on 3DS, Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters Daybreak Special Gigs on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and Vita, The Bunker on PlayStation 4 and PC, Wheels of Aurelia on PC, and looks like Zenith on PC and PlayStation 4. Also, Batman, the Telltale series, Episode 2, Children of Arkham, will be out on many platforms. Cossacks 3 on PC, Dear Escher Landmark Edition on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, H1Z1 King of the Hill on PC, NBA 2K17 on PC, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, and Xbox One. Also, Firewatch is finally making its way out to Xbox One. Pankapu on, Pankapu, I guess, on PC. Toy Odyssey, The Lost and the Found on PC and Xbox One. Virginia on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Warhammer 40,000 Eternal Crusade on PC, Mac, and Linux. A House with Many Doors on PC. And finally, The Bunker on Xbox One.
It was a busy week.
Yeah, a little bit later. I'm more excited about the week after that, where Cluster Truck comes out.
Oh, yay.
That looks awesome.
All right. Well, in Japan, there's some games to look forward to this week as well. On September 21st, Destiny Complete Edition is released in Japan. I'm assuming that is the all-in-one bundle to bring us up to the current expansion. That is out in Japan this week. And Utaware Rumo Ono Futare no Hakuro comes out in regular and a premium edition this week in Japan. And that is all, of course, on the PlayStation 4. But the PlayStation Vita gets releases as well, and that same Utaware Rumono game comes out on the Vita as well. But the Vita is also getting a game in regular and limited editions called Magic Kayun Renaissance. It comes out on the Vita this week. On the 3DS this week, nothing. No, I take that back. There is a game. One Piece Dai Kaizuko Coliseum is out this week. Looks like it's from Bandai Namco. And it looks like kind of a fighting game that looks like a bit of a Royal Rumble of sorts. That is available this week. That is a 3DS game, not a Wii U game. How did I get that mixed up? Shame on me. So that is the only release on the Nintendo 3DS this week. I was looking to see if there was a Wii U game, but it doesn't look like there's anything on the Wii U until Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens in October. So that is on the 3DS this week. So that is it for Japanese releases. How about the UK, Loki?
Not so much in the UK. We've got coming out this week NBA 2K17 as well, and then Cossacks 3 on PC and Firewatch on Xbox One.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. Every week you guys send us emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com if you want to participate with the show. You can send us your email. You should send us some emails. You know, I know Dark Soccer is not here to read them, but I will read them for you. And we'll still respond to them here on air. So send us your emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. We do have one email this week, so just one to read. But it's from JT, who emails us the following. Quick question about the new NES Classic Mini System. I've dabbled in emulation over the years, and despite having some pretty beefy hardware and numerous plug-in and wireless controllers, I still experience noticeable, albeit generally minimal, lag. While this is only a real issue with technical platformers and seems to be very dependent on emulator, ROM, monitors, etc., I've yet to get anything to feel as tight as an original system and CRT setup. Now, Nintendo has some pretty strict quality control concerns with their products and IP, so I was curious about how this box will work. Is it an emulator? Is there any way it can account for the varying display lag from modern HD displays? Have mini box systems like this from the past played well on modern displays? Thoughts? Much love to you and the show, JT. Well, JT, it's tough to know because the box isn't out. We've seen some glimpses of it at like trade shows and things, but even when they showed it at trade shows, I think they just showed the physical body of it. They haven't really shown what it looks like. Like, we don't know what the menu system looks like or any of that stuff, like how you pick from the 30 games. We don't know any of that. Now, here's the thing, is that you mentioned in your email about Nintendo having strict quality control, and that is true and is probably why Virtual Console releases are so slow, but I do want to point out Virtual Console games have gotten by Nintendo's quality thing, and some people have their complaints about the way things look on Wii or Wii U, especially like the colors being washed out sometimes. So, you know, that could still apply. We don't know if this is a new system that's being made. We don't know if they just took like a Wii U and just only have the part that does Virtual Console. Like, no. In there, it could be just a Virtual Console device for all we know. I don't know. We don't know. And so until we have some of those answers, I'm not sure we can fully answer the question. But I will point out, you know, how have other consoles, you know, retro things done this? I think about Atari Flashback. And I remember that, like, the Atari Flashback, I think it was the 2, like, was a full-on Atari 2600. And, like, you could play other cartridges on it, but it had all these things that were, like, preloaded on it. But it was set up to work with, I think it was the white, yellow, red plugs. I don't remember if that ran on HDMI or not. I'm not sure.
No, probably not for that.
You know, that the Flashback 2 might have been a little too old to get into that, but that one worked out pretty well. My speculation tells me that you are kind of on the right track with the quality control thing, and the fact that they know that most people own HD TVs and all this stuff, so they know that it has to meet a certain standard on these HD TVs. We also know, and they've talked about, there's going to be some types of filters and some types of sets. So it does seem like there is going to be some type of menu in there to change graphical type filtering like you see in emulators. So I'm thinking because of that, inherently, you're going to have something to adjust lag. And if they know that there's the different types of HD sets, that tells me that I have a pretty good feeling there will be something in there to adjust lag. But we just don't know for sure until we see this at some type of, you know, show or out in the wild or what have you. But it'll be, you know, it's through HDMI, so it's going to be made with the HD sets in mind. But will it support 4K TVs and all that stuff? I'm sure it'll work, but, you know.
With HDMI, I guess.
Yeah, I guess through HDMI, I guess it will. But, you know, it's not going to look any better or anything, you know, that type of thing. So, anyway.
I want to say they had, I forget who was working on the actual software with it. They named, like, it was somebody that, like, does, like, the Virtual Console ports or something like that, does working on it. So, I don't know. And they kind of talk, I'm trying to find the article right now. They talked about, like, you know, what... Let's see here. So, who was working on this here? They have, like, yeah, different modes. There'll be a 4x3 aspect ratio option if you want to do that. They have different filters. You can also do a pixel perfect option. I'm trying to see who they had working on it because they did name who it was, I thought. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, it should. I would be pretty confident that it's going to end up being good when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a good box that's worth your money. I mean, I don't know, because I have all this stuff on Virtual Console, so I don't know if I necessarily need to drop the extra money. And we're also talking Nintendo hardware, so I kind of feel like it's going to be really hard to get one the first day anyway. Nobody's taking pre-orders on this yet, right? I think I heard that somewhere. Nobody's really taking pre-orders, like not Amazon, not GameStop. Not. You know, and this thing's supposed to be out, what, November 11th? So I think everybody's kind of waiting to hear how many they're going to get. So I would encourage you, because this is Nintendo hardware, try to get reserves early.
Actually, Amazon's taking pre-orders, I think.
Are they? I could have sworn
that it's unavailable.
Yeah, I was like, I just looked today, and I'm pretty sure I didn't see it on there, so.
Target and Best Buy, they've listed here. Let me see if those are on there as well. No, it doesn't look like
anything. Yeah, I think everybody's waiting to see how many they get, so we'll see. You know, somebody in chat over at live.vognetwork.com, where was it here? Oh, Brad from PodCulture said, that fucker will be hacked in a heartbeat. You think we're going to be able to sideload our own games on this thing? I'm just not sure how we would get them in there, because this thing isn't going to take any type of storage. There's no, like, storage media, right? It's not going to take a USB card or a SD card or anything. Would you inject something in there? I don't know.
I don't know how you would do that.
But
yeah, some sort of mod chip, I would imagine.
Yeah, it would have to be something a lot more hardwired.
It'd be cool if it was something that's plugged into like the controller port or something like that, but I don't think that they'll be able to do that.
Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, surely somebody's going to try. Anyway, thanks for the great email. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com if you want to send us an email for a future
week.
Was
it the, I think it was either the first flashback or the second one, whatever. They had one that didn't have like the actual cartridge port, but it had the pinout for all the cartridges. So all you had to do is solder your own cartridge port onto it, and it could take external cartridges.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy. All right. Let's see. Let's move on to some other gaming news.
All right. So, you know, I don't know how we would say this. Farming Simulator does what Bethesda don't. I don't know. But apparently Farming Simulator 2017 is going to do something that's unheard of on the PlayStation 4. It's going to have mod support. And, yeah. I mean, but then again, though, Bethesda said they would have mod support. So I guess we'll have to actually see when it comes out. But, you know, according to the Twitter account, they said, just to confirm, Farming Simulator 17 mod support on both Xbox One and PlayStation 4 will be available when the game comes out. So, neat, I guess. I mean, I don't know what kind of mods they have for Farming Simulator, but I can only hope it's insane.
Well, of course it'll be insane.
That might be worth it just to pick it up for the mod support.
Topless mods.
Topless mods. I
don't know what on a farm would be topless. I guess the crows. Scarecrows with big boobs. That's what'll be the mods.
I can only hope.
SSG100 Matt in chat says, people are going to mod it to grow crops of dicks and boobs. Yeah, probably.
Marijuana crops.
Bobby Blackwolf says, Bethesda's issue with having PlayStation 4 mod support was more about how Sony wanted it implemented, not necessarily a technical limitation. Sony might have put some restrictions Bethesda didn't agree to, but Farming Simulator did.
That kind of annoys me that no one can come to an agreement, and here I have this Fallout 4 on PlayStation 4, and I'm unable to use mods with it, which is very disappointing.
Yeah, it's disappointing. All right, well, moving on to something different, not a mod, but official DLC for a game that just keeps on giving, Shovel Knight. And I thought they were like totally done with development on this game, but I guess not. Shovel Knight is getting more DLC. It's called Spectre of Torment, and it's supposed to release in spring of 2017. And they are saying that the Spectre Knight adventure is a huge game, so it's going to be a whole little kind of side thing going on. And ActDev pointing out there's actually two DLC left, including this one. So it sounds to me like this is probably going to be, I'm assuming, especially since it's been a while, they've been working on this, almost probably the size of the original game, probably type of expansion we're talking about here. I mean, we'll see. Don't take my word for it. Wait for Yacht Club Games to say something more official, but that's pretty cool. They did unveil at least the title logo and some of that good stuff there. So that is coming out spring of 2017.
All right.
Neat.
So Sonic, franchise that's been kind of plagued with not so great games recently. So there's been a lot of fan games made with it. And in fact, one of those was actually, they had showed some gameplay on YouTube, and the official Sonic channel responded to the video, basically saying, hey, BRB, DMCA time. Just kidding. Keep making great stuff, Sonic fans. So
that was a little shade.
So basically, they have given the go-ahead to, make fan games. So if you're going to make a fan game, they're not going to smack it down, at least is what it sounds like. Whereas Nintendo,
at least their social media channels won't.
Exactly. So, I mean, obviously, if you try to profit from it, maybe, they may have a problem with it. But as of just releasing like a free fan game or something, they don't seem to have a problem with it. So I'm very relieved with that, I guess. It's kind of disappointing that Nintendo doesn't have the same stance, but they're Nintendo, so what are you going to do?
I'm curious to see now that the floodgates have been... Well, I'm curious to see if they really do stick to that, because, Sega's a big company, and I'm sure the social media arm's a little different than the legal arm and so forth, but, I mean, I don't think there would be that big of a disparity. I don't think they're suddenly going to try to shut this game down. But I'd be very, very curious to see how this kind of opens the floodgates maybe for other fan things.
Well, if you remember, with Sonic, the Sonic Mania has a fan game in it. So, I mean,
true.
That's kind of
true. And sometimes didn't they hire the people who made a fan game to?
Yeah,
you know, yeah. So there you go. Bobby Blackwolf says in our chat, time for Vogic the Hedgehog. As long as he doesn't have shitty friends.
We'll just do Sonic Jam. It'll be another game jam that no one will make games for. It's Sonic Jam. It's all Sonic.
All Sonic all the time. Hey, this is neat. Xbox One's backward compatibility. You know, they keep adding to it every week, and they just added this past week Virtua Fighter 5, Final Showdown, Bound by Flame, and The Maw. If you've bought one of these games previously or you have them on disc, you can add them into your library. But what's notable about this, this brings up the total number of backwards compatible games to 250 games.
That's 250 more than PlayStation 4.
Yes. So, and 250 games that you don't have to pay for, unlike Nintendo. So there you go. So good guy Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly.
The things that happen when you're in second place.
You know, it's so weird. Like such a turnaround. But I guess, you know, Sony did the same thing.
Is there the things that happen when you're in second place. That's what it all boils down to.
Seriously. And it's just like there's, you know, it's all very positive for them. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's great. I think that I really hope they keep up with that.
It's great, but there are still more games I want to see, like Lost Odyssey. Still waiting on that. Where's those multi-disc games? We know it got to work.
And a digital version. Can we, you know, pick that up? Because I don't think I have my disc version anymore.
Well, it'd be nice. It'd be very nice. A couple more stories here before we open up our Skype line. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. If you want to give us a call tonight, we'll be opening that up in just a moment. But first, Loki.
So speaking of backwards compatibility, we talked last week about an NES emulator that almost made it through the whole certification process to appear as an Xbox or Windows Universal app on the Xbox One to be able to play NES games. And of course, you know, that got shut down and they weren't unable to put that out, but that did not stop them. That's right, NES Box actually has created a version of their emulator that runs in the web browser. That's right, it actually uses the Xbox One's Edge browser to be able to play games. Can't block that shit. So that's very cool.
Interesting workaround from all that.
What are you gonna do? I mean, there's not much you can do at that point. I mean,
no, then it's just an internet thing. It's just on the internet. What can you do at that point?
So, and apparently it works only with the Xbox One gamepad. It supports, you know, the AB select and all that stuff. And they're going to be adding OneDrive support to store your ROMs.
Before I get to the last story here, I have a comment in chat I want to answer that was on the backwards compatibility thing. She-Hulk in chat over at live.vognetwork.com said, how about getting the original Xbox games converted? That would be great. That would be great. That's a very good point. You know, is it, you know, what would be a great Xbox 360 thing to get working would be the Xbox emulator. That's right. I'm suggesting we emulate an emulator. But if it works, it works. You know, there was a lot of original Xbox games that worked pretty well in 360. But again, it was still limited, right? Like the DDR games were never playable.
Yeah, it was still limited.
But there was still a lot that did work. I mean, it was cool.
Would be kind of hard, though, going from, like, you know, one emulating an architecture, emulating another architecture. I mean, you would basically want to recreate that from the ground up. But
true.
I don't know where we're at
I feel like he commented, though, it's something they're looking at. I mean, but
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'd be even fine with them just, like, you know, going the PlayStation route and reselling them. I don't know. Maybe not. But it's just, I don't think a lot of people have those original discs anymore for the Xbox. Maybe they do. But if you really want to emulate those, I guess you have the Xbox 360. And I don't really know what kind of games you would get with. I mean, I guess you could have the Xbox, the original Halo or Halo 2. But they have remasters of those now. So
true.
I don't know.
They practically come with most Xbox Ones at this point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't know what the point would be, really. But, I mean, I think what they're doing is fine right now. And if they can manage to do that, that's cool. But I just don't think the time invested in making something like that and the return on that wouldn't be as great.
All right. Well, we'll see. I still would like to see them maybe do it at some point, but I understand why maybe they want to work on other. I want the backwards compatibility for Lost Odyssey more. Because
yes,
you're right. I have a 360.
I would love to go back to that. At this point, I probably have to start all over again, but
yeah, I think
I do want to play it.
We all probably would. Anyhow, one more story here before we open up Skype, and that is about, did you ever play the classic NES game Super Pitfall? Not to be confused with Pitfall 2, The Lost Caverns, which was a great game. The original Pitfall is obviously legendary on the Atari 2600, but the NES made a game called Super Pitfall.
I don't think it did.
It's awful. It's one of the worst NES games ever made. I remember buying it because I loved Pitfall. Asking my mommy very nicely to buy it for me because I loved the original Pitfall. I loved Pitfall 2, especially on the Commodore 64. So I was like, oh, Super Pitfall. Shit, there's a new Pitfall game. I've got to have it. And it was garbage. It was buggy. Like, you would just, like, randomly fall off ladders to your death. Like, I don't even know how something like this got past QA back in the day, but I guess it was a different time.
Nintendo seal of quality.
Yeah, right? So this game was pretty garbage. And I guess it was supposed to actually be a conversion of Pitfall 2, The Lost Caverns, but something went really, really, really wrong. Well, anyway, this game is celebrating its 30th anniversary, and for the most part, you would probably think, who the fuck cares? But maybe in a state of win, it's a good thing somebody did care. A person named NES Rocks decided to actually give the original game a makeover, changing the visuals, redesigning levels, including new music composed on FC and Chill. So apparently it actually fixes a lot of the issues with the original game. Here's the crazy part. David Crane, who originally made Pitfall, legendary designer from the 80s, definitely on my like dream list of people I'd like to have on this show someday. David Crane, who created the original Pitfall, which, by the way, had nothing to do with Super Pitfall, because at that point, you know, the brand.
That's not me.
Is that? Well, yeah, and he said this. But he actually reached out to NES Rocks and said, truly an amazing and impressive effort, and to learn assembly language programming in order to pull it off is equally impressive. I run into Super Pitfall haters all the time, and I'm quick to point out I had nothing to do with it, but now I can point them to your improved version. Well, that's quite the compliment coming from a legendary game designer like David Crane. And you can actually play it too. What it is, it's actually a patch. So if you have the Super Pitfall cartridge, you get the modification and then you use the patch on your Retron 5 or Retro Freak. And you can actually mod the game basically and play it. And it's questionably illegal, but I mean, are they really making money off Super Pitfall all these years later?
See, that's too bad. Like, imagine having that kind of mod support on the NES Mini. Yeah. Can you imagine how awesome that would be and horribly disgusting at the same time?
Comments in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Stoppy says, the PS2 Pitfall game is surprisingly good. SG100 Matt says, I just remember Jack Black being in the Pitfall commercial. And Dungeon Buster saying, oh, David Crane, he co-founded Activision and made that neat Ghostbusters game. Yeah, he made a lot of the classic 80s Activision games that were on the Atari 2600. He's a real legendary game designer. So, yeah, I would love to get him on the show someday. So Dark Tetsuya says, I played a little bit of it. I think I might try to beat this. So, yeah, you can revisit this game 30 years later. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and open up the Skype line. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word, if you want to give us a call on Skype. While we wait for some calls to come in, though, we need to let a little bit of angst out of our system to kind of cleanse things before we take some nice calls and smile for our callers with a segment we call the FUs of the Week. Funky?
You know, I don't really know who to... I guess, you know, it doesn't really affect me personally. I mean, it sort of did in the reverse sense because I was going to throw a nice field, and then this giant field came right as I got to the other portal that I was going to throw to, you know, for Ingress and stuff. But an FU to people that spoof their location in Ingress.
Fucking cheaters.
To knock down stuff because I think that has more of an impact in the gameplay versus people spoofing shit in Pokemon Go, which really doesn't fucking matter at all. I mean, honestly. But yet Niantic isn't doing bullshit. You know, they're doing jack shit about that. Instead, they're just fucking people over left and right. You know, they're just not focusing on the right.
I don't really have a lot of angsty things to put out there this week. Just F you to the fact that the weekend flew by too fast, and I've got like a lot of work to do at work tomorrow, which... You know, I like my job and all, but it's just like, oh, man, I feel like I didn't get to rest enough this weekend. It didn't help that they were having a party next door last night that was going until, like, 12:30, so I had to sleep on the couch last night because, like, I couldn't sleep for all the noise. in that end of the house. So, blah. But, yeah. Otherwise, honestly, things are mostly okay. There. I feel better. Hopefully you do as well. Let's get to the phones and take some calls. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, hey, it's Rama. What's up, everyone?
Hey, Rama, how you doing? You sound different tonight. Are you calling from somewhere else?
Yes, it's called a train on NJ Transit trying to get back home to New York City.
My gosh, you are calling us from a train, so coming to you live somewhere between New Jersey and New York, which, by the way, I heard about that incident in New York yesterday, and I'm glad to hear that there's injuries, which sucks, but thank God no fatalities.
Yes, definitely. And also, I apologize for the audio quality because I am tethering off one of my many cell phones that I have. So thank goodness for that.
That's okay. We'll make do. So tell us what's on your mind tonight.
I want to talk back to the beginning of tonight's show. You talked about those idiots who are suing Steam customers over bad reviews.
Please, what do you want to say about it?
I'm not going to name names, but there was a guy who runs a variety of anime, manga, and comic conventions in the Midwest, some on the West Coast and some on the East Coast. We've talked about him on our show. It seems that he does something similar. Pretty much, whether you are pressed with him or not, if you write up a bad review about his convention, he will sue you for defamation of character and slander.
I feel like even I've heard about this guy from Facebook posts and stuff. So the anime circuit has their own Amy's Baking Company.
Yes, and right now, when the lawsuit happened, the press outlet actually started a Kickstarter, to raise funds, and people threw money at it. It went to court. It got thrown out because of the jurisdiction. So this guy actually set up shop in this guy's jurisdiction and refiled the lawsuit.
Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, are these people going to have to actually defend themselves, or is this going to get laughed out of court, or what?
No, this guy actually has to defend himself, and if you look around, you can find a complete PDF of the entire docket of what's going on.
He's countersuing for legal fees, right?
Yes.
Good. I think that's a very important thing to do in these scenarios, so that way when these things do get thrown out of court, the countersuit for legal fees, at least you're hopefully not getting stuck with all that, because what a mess.
I know. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you put a game out, people are going to like it and talk about it. People are going to hate it and talk about it. People are going to be indifferent and talk about it. You've got to learn to take your lumps and go with it.
No matter what you do out there, no matter what you do, and it can be something that you're asking people for money, it could be something you're doing for free, like this podcast. No matter what you do, there are always going to be haters. There's always going to be haters. I get crazy weird emails and tweets and sometimes one-star podcast reviews for Orange Lounge Radio and so forth. And, it happens. We have haters. But it's just kind of one of those, you just kind of have to learn how to deal with those situations. And there's a really good line I picked up at a podcast panel at Dragon Con that I think would apply here. If one person complains about it, don't really give it a second thought. If two people complain about it, look into it. If three people complain about it, change it. You know what I mean? And I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb, is that there's always going to be people that complain about those strangest things. And, I try to evaluate everything and kind of go, is there something legit to this? And if there is, maybe I'll look into it. But if it just kind of strikes me as one of those, like, somebody just didn't agree with an opinion that we had on the show, and so they're lashing out with all these, which is why we're garbage and all that stuff. It's just like, I just kind of roll my eyes and move on and just go, haters gonna hate.
Damn right. See, I live by the 85-15 rule. If 85% of the people like what I'm putting out, I'm gonna roll with it. If 15% don't, they can leave it as is. When those numbers get reversed, then I know I have to stop what I'm doing, reevaluate, and flip the numbers back.
True. You know what, though? Even if one person likes what I'm doing, I'm pretty happy. Although, I don't know, 99 haters would be a lot. So I'm glad for the most part we seem to have more levers than we do haters.
Yes. And, and it's an amazing thing, because every year I go to conventions, I can't go a year without running into somebody who listens to the show. And I'm just like, I just get humbled, and I take my picture with them, and I post it on the site. I'm just like, got a listener. They like the show. You should check it out. You know, I just get extremely humbled because it makes me feel good knowing there's actually someone out there who likes to hear me rant about outlandish shit in fandom.
Same. You know, like when I get fortunate enough to do a panel, let's say at some type of gaming show or what have you, you know, I'm always, you know, the day leading up to the panel, I'm always kind of have those thoughts. Like, I think a lot of people do in their heads, like, nobody's going to fucking show up, Rob. Nobody listens to your show, Rob. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to show up to this thing because there's better stuff going on at the same time, bada, bada, bada. And then I'm always humbled. Like, even if just like 10 people show up to my panel, I'm like, holy shit, people actually made time to come see this and like were into it because I'm associated with it. And it just like blows my mind. It's so humbling. It really is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done live podcasts at conventions. The least I've gotten is like 4 people, and we get a good conversation going. And there have been times I've walked in, there's like 20 or 30. I'm like, y'all really want to hear the 3 of us get down and dirty? Do you realize what you're getting yourselves into? And then we realize, oh, we got to be PG because you never know who's walking by.
That's right. Never know.
Yeah, I don't know if that'd work for me.
What?
Being PG.
Oh, well, you kind of warn the con in advance. You know, it just depends on. You know, like if we were doing a live panel, let's say, and you look out in the audience and you see kids out there, you'll be able to self-edit. I know you will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, that's what duct tape is for.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rama, anything else you want to share before we open up the Skype line again?
I ate over 2-3 pounds of delicious, tasty pig and brisket yesterday.
Delicious?
Yes.
Mmm. You have me thinking about barbecue now. You know, I went to Round 1 in Concord yesterday. I didn't talk about this during my gaming week, but I went to the brand new Round 1 in Concord, and it's right next door to a Lucille's barbecue. So you can just smell the barbecue as you're going in. It's so good, which is hilarious because, you know, Shane, who, of course, drug me to Round 1 because, you know, who else does that type of stuff? He hates barbecue. He hates barbecue the way I hate mayonnaise. Like, really, really, really hates it, right? So he's just like, ugh. Like anytime you can smell the barbecue. So it's just kind of funny.
I can get hating mayonnaise. I get that. Not everyone likes condiments, but how do you hate barbecue? I'm not going to get it.
I think it's crazy too, but I also kind of look at it and go, well, barbecue sauce is a condiment as well as mayonnaise. So I can see if I'm allowed to hate mayonnaise.
There's such a variety of barbecue sauces versus mayonnaise, which is usually
well, they'll do. It's an aioli sauce. No,
oh,
it's fucking
no,
mayonnaise.
No, it's mayonnaise.
Yeah, see? So there
just
is.
Just like the overuse of Chipotle. We don't need fucking Chipotle everything, okay? It's like I see a Chipotle aioli
the
or whatever.
The only Chipotle we need is actual Chipotle.
Ah, we don't even need that. But
all right. Rom, I'm going to let you go, buddy.
All right. You take care, brother.
Take care, my friend. Bye.
All right.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype if you'd like to give us a call and say hello. Which actually the phones are ringing right now, so let's get to another call. Hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this? Hello, Orange Lounge Radio. You might be muted.
Oh, sorry.
There we go. Hi, who's this?
This is Eric RPG.
Hey, Eric RPG, what's on your mind, buddy?
I am just calling to talk about what I've been up to lately.
What have you been up to lately?
I got a cold on, like, Thursday, so I've been dealing with it.
Wait a minute, though. Okay, but in your picture, you have little Dragon Quest slimes on your shoulder. So if you've been sick, then clearly you've been playing Dragon Quest VII on the DS nonstop, right?
The 3DS, yes.
Yeah.
That's one way I can enjoy my weekend despite feeling like crap. And I didn't even go to a con either.
Well, something's going around. It is that time of year where people are supposed to be getting flu shots and all that stuff, so... So you called to just complain about how you're sick, or is there some games?
No,
you've been
I'm going to talk about the game.
Oh, okay, yes, please. What have you been playing?
In addition to Dragon Quest, I've also been playing Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse.
Ah, and how's that?
It's a very much improved version of the original Shin Megami Tensei 4, and they look like they actually put some effort into the story this time because. Even though the series hasn't really been big on a story, they usually just put up a structure and then you just do things. They actually seem to make a better resolution than they did in the last game. Because the last game, no matter which path you picked, the ending was primarily the same, and the conclusion of the neutral ending, which is the true ending of the game, was not very satisfactory. And the biggest problem with that game is the fact that the maps didn't have labels. I don't even know how they shipped the game out without telling you where to go or what the names of places were on the map, because wandering around aimlessly isn't exactly fun, even though I still loved that game to death. It was like one of the worst things about that game. So they fixed that.
So because I know you do game reviews and stuff, you must have an early copy of this, because I'm noticing that Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse isn't actually out until this coming week, right?
Yeah, it's out Tuesday.
It's out on Tuesday, so you're kind of getting a little...
The reviews went up, like, Thursday, but I haven't written mine yet because I've been sick.
Well, and I think the Japanese reviews were very kind to this game, because it's been out... Of course, it's been out in Japan, like, for a year, since February, when it came out in Japan. And Famitsu gave it a 35, which is, you know, respectable, certainly. It has an average of 9.0... Or, I'm sorry, GameSpot gave it a 9.0, I guess. So it's getting pretty good scores.
The only thing I could knock it for is... that you're going to a lot of the same locations you did in the last game, but that's understandable since it's in the same setting.
Well, what if I'm somebody new to the series? Would I, like, because I got to admit, I haven't played a lot of these games just because there's only so many hours in a day, and I can't play everything. So I'm kind of newer to these games. So seeing as I would be bringing no knowledge of what was wrong with, you know, the past games into this, would I get a kick out of it?
I mean, if you like the whole monster collecting aspect, but you want something a little bit more edgy, I guess. It's a good start, but it is more challenging than most RPGs. But
although
there is a casual difficulty for those who don't want to play on the normal one.
To be honest, Erica, I actually bought Dragon Quest VII when it released, but I only played like 2 minutes of it. I was so busy during the weekend since I went on a road trip and everything. I haven't been able to play Dragon Quest VII at all, so I didn't talk really about it in the intro. But to be fair, that's going to be the 3DS RPG that dominates some time this week and probably for the next few weeks, because Dragon Quest VII is a very, very, very long game.
Yeah, it's like 100 hours.
Yeah, and that's not even the side quest, right?
With the side quest, that probably is about right.
Oh, okay.
But the original game took me about 110. And this one actually has more content in it. I don't know if it has that much more, but they also streamlined the game, so it's probably about the same.
Okay, yeah, because I think they did do some like Street Pass type stuff is in it too. So I know they have like some new things in it as well. But you know, it's something I want to play through relatively soon, because A, you know, Pokemon Sun and Moon are coming, and I'm going to have to play those. I really still need to beat why is the Alpha Sapphire escape the name for a minute. I still need to beat that, and then Dragon Quest VIII is out in 2017, and I really want to play that, because I actually didn't play a lot of Dragon Quest VII when it was first out, but I did play a lot of Dragon Quest VIII when it was out on PlayStation 2, and gorgeous soundtrack and, you know, funny voice
about
acting.
About the soundtrack, apparently it, much like VII, is not going to feature the symphonic soundtrack.
Aw, that's sad.
But in VII's case, I can kind of understand it, because apparently when they did the game 3 years ago in 2013 in Japan for the 3DS, they couldn't figure out how to code it properly, and they ended up using only about half the tracks before it would loop.
So that was
pretty gross.
Yeah.
So they're like, instead of half-assing this, let's just change it. And plus, it might have something to do with copyright, but I don't think it does, because if that were the case, the new music would also be copyrighted.
Yeah, true.
Unless it's operating through a third party, and they don't have to worry about the legalities, because they're willing to pay the price that they're asking.
Right.
But other than that, I don't understand why they removed it for 8, other than the possibility of them just simply not having the room for both voice acting and 5 language text files.
Yeah, that does sound really, really
big.
Because
what they do with the North American releases is they basically make a base European version with all the language tracks on it.
Yeah.
And then they coded for the regions as needed.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you're sick, but I'm glad to hear you have several RPGs that are very, very, very long to help you get through it.
I'd also mention, while we're on the subject of RPGs, I have a review up on VOG.
Yes, you
for,
do.
For Grand Kingdom.
Yes, you do. I hope folks will check that out and let their response.
Strategic turn-based RPG that has a perspective similar to Guardian Heroes in that there's three layers. And you have to place your characters appropriately so they don't do splash damage to each other, because there is friendly fire in that game.
And you ended up giving that game, well, I shouldn't spoil everything, but you gave it a positive review. I won't say exactly what the score is. You'll have to go to VogNetwork.com to check that out. But you mentioned that there is a lot of load times in it as kind of one of the maybe downsides to it.
I mean, they're short, but they're frequent, so yeah. That's annoying.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody check out that review over at VogNetwork.com. It's still on the front page. Just have to scroll down past the recent podcast to see it, but you can check that out. And if you've played the game yourself, don't forget to leave a response review to it.
There's also a review of The Walking Dead Michonne. And hopefully I can get Season 3 up.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for the call. I'm going to let you go so we can get a couple more calls in, okay?
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye. All right. I did something very strange to the audio recorder, and I'm worried that I've stopped recording. No, it's still going. Thank God. I can't even believe that. And the first time in like hundreds of episodes I've done that, I clicked on the recorder accidentally because I was trying to click to another window, and it like stopped. Usually I can see the little waveform as it's being created, but I accidentally like clicked in the window, and yeah, screwed that up. But I fixed it, so we're good. We're still recording. Sorry. Oh, boy. This has been an interesting technical night here at Orange Lounge Radio. I'm going to see if we can squeeze in one more call. So Orange Lounge Radio on Skype, if you want to give us a call and talk about what have you. Is that accurate? Stoppy says in chat, what? Can't hear? Don't scare me like that. Can you really not hear us? Or is everything okay? I'm hoping everything's okay. I see a waveform going, so I know it's recording fine. So I'm going to hope everything's fine. Okay. Everything says it's all fine. Don't do that to me. Rude. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Hack Deft.
Hey, Hack Deft. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, I wanted to talk about a recent announcement for my city that got me pretty excited.
What's that?
Well, Capcom Live.
Oh, Capcom Live. What is this going to be like a touring fighting thing, or what is this?
No, it's actually a video game concert.
Really? How did I miss this? I had not heard about this.
Yeah, it didn't get that much attention. It did. It was featured on shoryuken.com, but very briefly. But yeah, they made, it's a local convention here named Gamacon. It's a video game development and business convention, basically, but it's open to the public. So yeah, they're gonna bring Capcom Live concert on November 5th, if I remember correctly.
Interesting, because I'm looking at the website. You can check this out at CapcomLive.com, and I noticed Tommy Tallarico is involved with this, who, of course, very big with video games live as well. So it feels like – so I guess there's kind of that common thread there to video games live, which is a great production. So, you know, you're going to have some of that, like, audiovisual stuff coming into play. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, again, I'm pretty excited about it. Also, Shota Nakama also works on it, and he has worked on many – Square Enix game this F of Light, so he's a pretty good composer. He actually, if I remember correctly, came last year to the same convention. They made a smaller concert, but it was decent enough, but it wasn't that great. So hopefully with this one, Capcom Live, it will be way, way better.
You know, and ActDeft, I think part of the reason why this isn't getting a lot of traction on blogs and stuff is that I'm looking at the site, and the only date that's on the list right now is this event in Mexico. So I think it's probably off the radar for folks in the U.S. and Canada and so forth, since it's, you know, in another country. But maybe this is something where they're kind of like sometimes with especially when comedians, before they do a big tour, they might do like a test show in a smaller market, right, before they take things like, you know, on tour, like in stadiums and stuff. So maybe this is kind of like a test run for Capcom Live.
Most probably, I am seeing on Capcom's live page that they are having, I think, some shows on Japan.
Oh, cool.
But they're until like December, so probably, yeah, they're probably testing some stuff here, which I don't care about since we are getting it, and I'm gonna enjoy it equally.
As you should. You know, sometimes you guys in Mexico, you have to wait for things because you don't always have, you know, you don't have a lot of game companies that release stuff directly there. Sometimes you have to wait to get them from the States and what have you. So, you know what? That's totally fine that you guys get something first for a change, but I fully expect you to go and then call into the show and tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, anything else on your mind, ActF?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right.
Yeah, again, I'm pretty excited about it, and yeah, hopefully it will be really, really great.
I'm sure it'll be a good time. All right, take care, my friend. I'm going to let you go.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. All right, so I think that is going to do it for the Skype line tonight. I'm sorry if you didn't get through, but please consider sending us an email, participate@orangeloungeradio.com. Just want to check in with Loki real quick and see if there's any other last-minute stories before we wrap things up here at OLR
yes,
tonight.
Yes, I do have something. Apparently coming from Microsoft, they made a comment regarding Scorpio, and basically with USA Today said that any games that we're making that we're launching in the Scorpio timeframe, we're making sure that they can natively render at 4K. So any Xbox, you know, One games for Scorpio are going to render at 4K, which is pretty impressive.
Begs
the question, how fucking expensive is the Scorpio? So we'll have to see.
We'll see when they decide to give us some details on it, which I'm assuming is next E3, but I suppose they could always do something soon.
$599 US dollars.
$699 US dollars. We'll see. We'll see. It might be a very powerful system. Anyhow, that is going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. If you enjoyed what you heard here at OLR, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend or five about the show, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we can't get those voices out there if they're not here joining us. So a nice five-star review on a site like iTunes or Google Play or what have you will go a long, long way in helping to spread the word. But, you know, word of mouth is always really the best referral. And I did just want to quickly footnote here somewhere in the show tonight talking about these places to hear a podcast just kind of reminded me. I did make a post on our forums, which I also linked on social media earlier this week. I did make a difficult decision to pull Orange Lounge Radio from Stitcher this week. And so we're no longer on Stitcher Radio, and that's I'm fine with that because the show that was being presented on Stitcher Radio was out of date. There were episodes missing, and I was getting tweets all the time about where's your show? Did you stop doing your show and all this stuff? And I can't allow a network. I don't care how big it is. You know, I know Stitcher's a very popular choice. I can't allow a network to misrepresent our show like that. So I made that difficult decision to.
Did they ever figure out like why is it that they?
You know,
can't update
I did.
Correctly?
I'll tell you this. I did get an email probably about a week ago that said something about file length or something was coming into play, and they were having a hard time figuring out what was going on. I guess, but the thing that actually really cheesed me, that really ticked me off, and actually kind of made me decide to pull the show was that they sent this what like a week ago. They've known for months that this is happening, and my understanding is that Stitcher has changed hands. Like they were owned by one company, they just recently got bought by another. So hopefully this will change for the better. And I'm not going to rule out that we'll never go back to Stitcher. I mean, if they'll have us at this point, because obviously I'm not doing them a favor here with this, but I think most reasonable people will understand why I'm upset. And for the sake of our listeners and the accurately reflecting the regular show we're working very hard to put out here, I made a difficult decision to pull the plug. And it actually kind of irritated me more that they knew there was a problem for months and didn't. Like, I don't understand. No other sites have this problem. It completely has to do with the fact that Stitcher pulls down the shows for their own, you know, network, which is controversial in and of itself. I know some podcast producers that really don't like that. But I always was kind of like, well, you know, it's not really about, since we're not trying to sell ads or anything, I'm okay not having those impressions or whatever. I just want to get the show out there. But I really hit my breaking point when things weren't being accurately reflected. So, if you're hearing this, then that tells me you migrated from somewhere other than Stitcher to be here this week. So I just really want to thank you for making that. And I'm sorry to have put you in that position from your preferred internet player or what have you. But I can't really stress this enough. There was unfortunately a cost to being on that network that I was no longer willing to basically live with, and that was the fact that you were missing shows and you weren't really getting the full OLR. So there it is. Yeah, and Bobby Blackwell says, I switched to Google Play anyway for my podcasting listening. I was on Stitcher. You know, and I made a couple tweets about it, and I got to say, I didn't intend for this to happen because this was the choice that I made for our show, but I've heard from some other podcast producers that said, you know, I had a Stitcher widget on my site, and I've actually looked into getting listed on TuneIn's so I can get a widget from them instead because, yeah, the concerns you're voicing are pretty, pretty valid. So I'm not out to ruin Stitch or anything like that. I want to make it very clear, you know. But I just they need to evaluate a lot of things over there and just run something that is not going to put the blame on us because their thing can't read the show accurately. So there you go. Anyhow, that's really all I wanted to say on that. But I'm glad I remembered there through the different plugs. So now let's go around and get everybody's final thought for the night. I guess I pretty much just gave a big final thought, but my other final thought I will give tonight is I can't wait for my Golden Girls pop figures to get here. I don't know why, but Amazon isn't delivering them to me until October, so it's sad to see that they're out there in the wild and some of my friends are getting them, but at least I know they're all on reserve and they're all coming, and it's not like a pop figure is something I have to have right now, but it would be nice. Loki, your final thought tonight?
My final thought is I am going to work more on my game, and hopefully I'll actually have something in the show for it now that I've gotten past that mental block.
Good plan. I like that plan. All right. Next week, live via Skype, Aethernaut will be here for a live interview. Very excited to welcome him to the show and to welcome all of you back next week to talk about what happens in gaming then. So until then, have a great gaming week, everybody. We'll see you next time here at Orange Lounge Radio.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.